Do you like golf? Do you like charity? Do you like having fun with friends? Do you like Jason and Carly Zucker? Well, then we have the opportunity for you. As you may already know, we have the second annual 10K Invitational coming up here in August. August 22nd, to be exact. That's a Monday at Victory Links Golf Course in Blaine, Minnesota. And you can sign up a team today at 10ktakesmn.com. And there's a 10K Invitational tab there where you can sign up. And it comes with a free towel courtesy of SodaStick. Of course, a round of 18 holes. And then potential for prizes, money, and more. There's even a dinner afterwards at CRS Billiards. And it's going to be a great time. It's all for charity.
Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, you're good.
There is also a silent auction. And as of today, thanks to dinner heating and cooling, there's going to be 4 club wild tickets and a parking pass. Mm-hmm. So I remember last year the silent auction was pretty bomb, and I expect it to be even better this year.
It's one of the stellar sites of our invitational.
It's the cornerstone
exactly
of 10,000 Takes charity work.
Yes, it's not the golf. It's the silent auction for charity. But again, all proceeds from this tournament, when you sign up a team, or even if you're a company looking to sponsor, all proceeds go back to the Give 16 charity, which helps the children at the University of Minnesota Masonic Children's Hospital, specifically the Jason and Carly Zucker Family Broadcast Suite. So help those in need, less fortunate than us, and come out and play a round of golf with us and everyone else. And Jason and Carly Zucker will be there. Jason will be driving around. It's going to be a great time at Victory Links. But sign up today again at 10ktakesmn.com, and you'll find a big, beautiful tab at the top there that says 10K Invitational Golf Tournament. Go there, sign up. All the information's right on there as well if you need more info beyond this ad. But sign up today.
On today's episode of It's a Bit, we're joined by Jason Zucker, recurring guest on the show, good friend of 10,000 Takes, professional hockey player for the Pittsburgh Penguins. We're partnering with him on the 10K Invitational. Super fun interview with him, talking all things golf, hockey, Vegas. You're not going to want to miss that. We're also going to give our bits of the week, as always, and end the show with canceling stuff, because it's 2022. Everyone and everything's getting canceled. At this point, this segment is just our way of venting just to a public forum, which probably isn't the best way to handle it. But you know what? That's what we do. We're in media. So all that and more on It's a Bit.
This is the It's Bit podcast, presented by 10,000 Takes.
Burgeoning empire called 10,000 Takes.
This is the It's a Bit podcast featuring Boss Man, Wags, and journalist Jake.
Journalist Jake's a bitch, motherfucker.
Hey, you know those guys that do 10,000 Takes? They do some funny bits, right?
They're good. They're funny dudes.
Yeah.
10,000 Takes.
You're hanging with the number one podcast in the Twin Cities. It's a Bit with 10,000 Takes. Last name
ever. Welcome back to It's a Bit, ladies and gentlemen. Presented by 10,000 Takes. My name is Boss Man. I'm joined by just journalist Jake. Just two of us. It is actually my fault. So Cam was back in the mix, but I forgot to tell him that we actually recorded the show a day earlier to fit Jason's schedule. And Cam was like, I was never notified of this. And I'm like, I'm sorry, man. I can't remember everything all the time.
You know, I beg to differ. I think he might have been notified because he is in, you know, some of the chats and everything like that. But it's hard to see if, you know, because we ramble on in some of these chats for sure. But yeah, that's why Cam is not here, unfortunately. So we do not have him to rip on.
Well, I sent him the message via Raven, which apparently is not a reliable form of communication anymore. The Raven must not have made it to Cam's home in Eagan. So I guess let's blame Mother Nature on this one.
I thought when you said the Raven, you actually meant some sort of new app. I'm like, never heard of that.
No, the Raven.
Oh, the Raven.
It's just another food delivery app, but you can also text people in it.
Exactly.
No, I'm a Game of Thrones guy.
Yeah.
So
the Raven.
That's how they communicate in Game of Thrones. Either back in those days, you either put the message in a bird, which is bananas, or someone fucking runs all the way there. And then eventually they had horses.
Yeah, the messenger. I think they did do that in Lord of the Rings as well, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I love the shit we complain about in the 21st century, and you used to have to run to deliver messages to other cities.
Mm-hmm. Miles.
That might have been your job. You were probably fit as hell, but imagine just that's like the epitome of your existence is running to another city to tell them, like, we're going to war with this city now.
Or sail across the ocean for days on end with famine and disease.
Mm-hmm.
That's fun.
Let's be thankful, folks. But let's get into the bit of the week. Start with you, journalist Jake. There's just two of us, so What do we got for bits?
Yeah, so I'm going to go with...
They better be good.
Yeah, we
got half the crew here, good, half the cast.
But if they're not good, I would love some feedback on social media. But, well, mine is the drunken musician bit. So I think there is kind of always like this person at parties, who the guitar guy, right? Like you have the guy that is the musician, I would put in air quotes musician, who gets drunk at a party or gets a little drunk and they see a guitar and they have to pick it up and start playing. Well, I am that person. We were having a house party at the 10K house here on Friday, or I should say a get together. I don't want to scare people, but you know, I started picking up my guitar and started playing it a little bit. And usually I won't typically play that if a lot of people are there. If I'm sober, you know, like I'll play that by myself or if you're having a jam sesh with the bros. But I'm of course a little drunk. I'm like, I'm going to pick up guitar and just randomly start playing. And I become the guitar guy. And when you're at a party like this and you pick up a guitar, you have to be prepared because everybody then thinks you are like Slash or Jimi Hendrix and can play every song known to man. So people were legitimately coming up to me asking, hey, do you know this song by Taylor Swift? You should play that. Or you should play Wonderwall by Oasis. I'm like,
you should be like, I'm not taking requests.
No, I play what I want. What do I look like? I'm not going to play Taylor Swift. I don't know how to play that shit. So that's where I was. I mean, I was just playing like, I probably played like, I don't know, Smells Like Teen Spirit and some really easy songs that my drunk brain can take, which is probably just the same as my sober brain.
See, at least you know how to play music on the guitar, though. Like, I'm only good at Guitar Hero. I'm, like, really good at Guitar Hero, so I try to impress people by them watching me play Guitar Hero, but it's just really weird to watch someone else play video games, so I've never quite gotten the same level of... impression by that.
I don't know. I feel like that could be of equal status. I feel like at a party when people are drunk and they see you hammering through the fire and the flames on Expert, I feel like there's some
Well, what you got to do actually is you got to put on it when everyone's like really fucked up at the party, you got to put on a YouTube video of someone playing through the fire and the flames and then just have the guitar and just like shred every button nonstop.
No one's going to notice because they're
going to be like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
That's an idea for you, folks.
Exactly. Do that. You can become the guitar guy either virtually or in real life.
Yeah.
Pick your poison.
That could be your bit. My bit is along the same lines, except it's a lot more embarrassing. I have the drunken cancellation bit. So I think both our bits go back to our other roommate, Donnie, houseboy Donnie's birthday on Friday night. This was probably the first time we had like a shit ton of people at the 10K house, mm-hmm. and it was reckless. Like,
it was crazy.
It was a fun night, but... So we had a tee time for, I think, 12:30 at Meadowbrook. And if you don't know what it's like to golf in the Twin Cities, you're either getting a tee time 2 days in advance or you're not playing golf that day. Like, you're not waking up on Saturday morning and finding tee times wherever you want to play. Like, we got lucky later. I'll get into that. But I was so, like, fucked up when I went to bed. I was like, there's no way I'm going to make this tee time. Mm-hmm. And I just canceled it. We had this thing booked out. We had booked it a few days in advance. I was just like, I just remember realizing how inebriated I was, and I was like, we're not gonna make it. And then I just canceled the tee time, and I remember you guys were downstairs the next morning, like, so I got some bad news. I remember I spent like an hour in my bed looking for other courses, and I'm like, uh-oh, like I ruined today for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I told you guys, and you're laughing, you're like, what'd you do? I'm like, you're not gonna laugh in a couple minutes when I tell you what I did. And
I never expected you were gonna say that, to be honest.
Especially because I love golf. Like, I will play, and I won't play in the morning. I'm not a psychopath. I won't do that. But it takes a lot to get me not to play. And a different person canceled the tee time. I didn't know how to tell you guys that.
Yeah, it was shocking news for a Saturday morning. And we were prepping, and we had our buddy Josie, who blogs for us. I took off of work because he knew we were going to be golfing.
That's why I
day.
Felt really bad about it.
But we managed to find a tee time at Valleywood somehow. Shout at a out. Decent time. And I don't know if there was a cancellation there on their end, another drunk guy canceling, because we found a decent tee time around the 2 o'clock hour and went out there and had a good time.
Well, and keep in mind, we would have loved to have played at like 4 or 5, but we had something. It was Jenna from the JJ Twins. Yeah. It was her birthday. Yes. She had a celebration at 7. So we were like, well, the 5 o'clock tee time is usually the best time to play, especially on a Friday. But we were like, we're not gonna make the dinner thing. So we had to have a time that we'd be done off the golf course by 6. Shout out to Valleywood and our friend Jordan there, who let us film the video with Tanner and Mariano. If you want to check that out, we played two Gopher players, Tanner Morgan and Mariano Sorimarin, and in a scramble, and it was a blast. That was at Valleywood.
It was.
Long story short.
Very nice course.
But yeah, and this can probably relate to anyone else. There are probably people who cancel dinner plans, who cancel mm-hmm. reservations here, who cancel activities there because they're just so drunk that night that they assume that they're not going to feel better until Sunday.
Or they do the opposite and they book something way too early.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, you can be like, we're golfing tomorrow, man. We're 8 a.m.
One of my buddy's bachelor parties up in Brainerd. My buddy Cole, you know Cole.
Mm, yep.
He scheduled the tee times for 9 a.m. the second day. We were out till Zorba's at bar close. We came home and drank more. It was like 4 in the morning when the time I passed out. And I remember he like woke us up at 9. He's like, all right, boys, let's go. We're going golfing. And I'm like, I was just berating him for a few minutes. I'm like, why the fuck would you schedule the tee time for 9 o'clock? And I'm like, I want to die right now. I need at least 2 hours to just remember what it's like to have basic motor skills. Mm-hmm. And I got to get up and golf. I remember the first two holes, I was nauseous, but I had a few emergency beers in the bag and we were back in business.
They help you out.
Morning tee times the night after you haven't even been drinking are still brutal. Like mm-hmm. if I have to wake up for anything that's not work, it better be important or something I really enjoy. And I do really enjoy golfing, but it's just play at night. It's way more fun to play at night.
Yeah, and the weather's better too. It can be a little cooler out, and you know, you're already in the drinking mood anyway. You're not tired usually, unless you're hungover, which is different than waking up super early. But it's scary when you book something super early. I think I saw the video. There was a video that went kind of viral. It's like a bachelorette party or something, where a bunch of girls were on the boat, and they're like, "Don't schedule a party boat at 7 in the morning or 8 in the morning on a bachelorette weekend or a bachelor
party
weekend."
They let you do that?
I guess, but they showed the video and everybody was just either sleeping, like hungover as shit, and like they were all like super tired and like super out of it, even though it was a party boat. And there was bumping music and everything, and they're all sitting
EDM,
out of it,
except, EDM and bottles.
And there was like alcohol there and they're like barely drinking it. A lot of them looked like they were dead and they were zombies. But then there was this one girl that was bumping to the music, like still going at it. I'm like, why are you scheduling something that early? Maybe it was cheaper, but it's like, don't go out. Don't party the night before. Maybe start the bachelor party that day.
Or it was probably one of those things where they didn't plan on going on the party boat and it was like 10 p.m. and they're like, oh, well, there's one available for 7. Like, let's just do it. We should just do it.
We'll
and
be
then
fine.
And you go out till 3-4 in the morning, especially in Miami. Is that what you said it was?
I don't know where it was.
It's probably like Miami.
It might have been Miami, but it's like, ugh. Yeah, they're like, girl, it'll be fun. Let's just book it at 7. We'll be fine. And then just nope. And they still actually made
Courtney
it out there.
Shortly regretted that decision.
Yeah. At that moment, she knew.
She fucked up.
Yeah. Exactly.
Don't do anything at 7 a.m. Sleep. Let your body rest. For those people who are like, I wake up at 6 a.m., 3 eggs,
every day,
2 weight lifts. It's like, stop.
The workout aspect, like I like waking up once in a while. Like if I'm up north and I didn't aggressively drink the night before and I'm going out fishing on the lake, it's really nice to get out there. It kind of still kind of sucks getting up. And when you're out there, you're like, okay, this is cool. And I've golfed up north a couple of times super early. And once you get out there through a couple holes, you're like, okay, this is okay. If you're not hungover.
Right.
And you're not doing this every single day and you're doing something you kind of want to do, you kind of have a little motivation that, you know, stuff that's not work. But if you're, of course, those guys that are waking up at 5 a.m. and nothing to get, I mean, that's, I guess there's some science to it. You know, waking up at 5 a.m., getting a workout in, getting the protein, you probably feel good, but then.
Or if you play hockey for Cal Dietz, you're jerking off at some point too.
At 3 or 4 in the morning and then icing your balls and then waking up early for, I mean.
Go for hockey. Shit. Strength trainer. How's he do that if that's your thing?
Yeah.
And for the people, when I said don't wake up and do shit early, I'm just saying that because I'm too lazy to, and I know I'd probably be way more productive during the day if I woke up and did that shit. If you just know my personality, I like sleeping in, so couldn't make me do it. But folks, we have quite a long interview with Jason Zucker planned. It was absolutely electric, so we're going to cut to that really quick after a quick commercial. Ladies and gentlemen, as journalist Jake has mentioned in the prior weeks, we have been called up to the big leagues. No, we're not talking at sports. We suck at those. We're talking about something better, building cup snakes. We're actually taking it back to where it all started, Target Field, to build a world record cup snake. I think we got to beat 247 feet was our own record, 241 from the wild game. That is the number to beat. And luckily, we're flying in some special help. Sammy Adams, platinum recording artist, sings All Night Longer.
Great tune.
Yeah. I know the lyrics. I just don't want to sing the whole song. But Sammy's awesome dude. It's going to be fun partying with him. I know there's going to be an after party at some point after, so be on the lookout for that. But tickets are on our website, 10ktakesmn.com, if you go to the events tab, yep. Or it's our on our pinned tweets of golf tournament. But if you're yep. on TikTok or Instagram, it's the link to buy tickets. So buy them for you and all your friends. I think tickets are $42, but it includes $15 of loaded concession value, which, let's be honest, you're going to spend anyways.
Yeah, exactly.
And $5 back to the Twins Community Fund. So we're also building Cup Snakes for charity, because you always got to throw a charity aspect in there. You got to, whatever you do, do it for good reasons. Mm-hmm. If we're going to get drunk and build a Cup Snake, I hope we can somehow benefit the game of baseball.
Yes, build up the youth and bring it to more people, I think, is the mission of the Twins Community Fund.
We build Cup Snakes, but we also want to build youth.
Baseball.
Yeah.
Popularity and involvement, I should
say. Right, involvement.
And especially in communities where they probably need more involvement, you know, touring communities. But yeah, we're drinking the beer while they're getting baseball.
We're drinking the beer so they don't have to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, so go to if you're listening from Instagram or TikTok, it's in the link to buy tickets. If it's any other social, just go to 10ktakesmn.com/events. You'll find it in the top post. But yeah, get your tickets now. The rows are definitely filling up fast. I know a lot of people have said we're coming. We're excited to build the snake. Sammy's flying all the way from New York City to build the snake to perform a banger after. So it's going to be a great weekend. All right, folks, welcome back to It's a Bit. Special guest joining us, recurring guest. We got Jason Zucker, professional hockey player for the Pittsburgh Penguins. Jason, welcome back to the 10K studio.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
Yeah, and I was going to say this is probably a significant upgrade from the last studio you were in. You were one of the OGs who got to go to the Prior Lake Closet.
Yeah, I mean, at least I got to sit on the couch and hang out. I mean, it was a good setup still. I liked it.
It was the casting couch.
Yeah.
So podcasting couch, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, I remember last year you said that it gave off strong Amazon vibes or early startup vibes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
100%.
Does this still have Jeff Bezos vibes?
This is better. I mean, okay. you're working your way up. Did you ever look at that picture, by the way?
We put it in the clip too. Mm-hmm. And it's you were talking about the poster where it's just blue spray paint that says Amazon.
Yeah. And I mean, it was dialed in for what they needed at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you got to upgrade. You work your way up.
Right.
You guys did it. This is great.
Moved away from a couch to some tables.
Yep. Yeah.
We're getting
a nicer camera. Yeah. And it's funny you mention about like that's all they had. The first time we ever did a live show when we changed our logo, we did like a wild watch party and we realized that we didn't have a flag or anything with our logo on it. So my mom actually drew that right there, provided the sign
for
the
day. She drew
that. She drew that by hand.
That's really nice.
Yeah.
There's no chance I could do that.
No,
I have zero artistic ability.
No. I have to like cheat and trace stuff or I had to have to print it and then somehow like do something with the lines and then just color them in.
Is there anything in here that we trace? Because I know we did that a couple times for like our stupid football tailgates that we did for Gopher football games.
That sign's outside if you want to go get it quick.
Yeah, no, is it outside?
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Okay, let me go grab it quick.
Yeah, it was, we did like a tailgate. We were pissed off that ESPN didn't go to the Gopher Penn State game when it was like a huge game for Big Ten implications. And we were like, we're just going to have our own tailgate show out of the back of my truck. So we drew our own sign. We called it College Game Morning.
This was traced.
Well, that's actually the better of the two. You should go get the actual.
That looks pretty good.
It's just on the it's sitting on the shelf somewhere over there. That one's actually the good one. I think I cheated on that one somehow though. I think someone had a projector and I traced it.
Oh, see, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah.
I was gonna say that's a large stencil.
Right.
That wouldn't.
Yeah, he found it. This is the bad one.
You talking about the whole board?
Yes.
Yeah, we got the whole board here.
Oh, yeah.
That one's tough.
And we actually use the same board for Wisconsin.
You just put a piece of paper over it.
Yeah.
We had a Penn State logo.
That's a pretty good helmet, though.
Yeah. And we didn't have...
That face mask is pretty hideous, I'm going to be honest.
Jason, do you think the helmet on the left would protect you in a hit?
I think it's a bowling ball with someone's foot next to it.
This is not... I don't know if we can
see that. Yeah, there it is. That's tough.
I've never seen a perfectly round helmet before.
No.
Hey, that's impressive, guys. I mean, it's really about the effort.
Right. Well, and unfortunately, we didn't have Home Depot to sponsor our show, but we had Rock Hard Home and Hardware, which is
nice.
It's a may or may not be a non-existent company. Yeah. But
right.
Hoping it's legit.
But
I'm sure there's one somewhere.
There's got to be. Well, no, there is. Actually, not a hardware store, but it's a
Rock Hard Landscaping in Burnsville.
Yeah, it's in Burnsville. It's Rock Hard Landscaping, and you can get Rock Hard hats from there.
See, that's sweet.
Yeah.
You're onto something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're artists. We're getting there. We don't need to go to professionals. We're amateurs here, and we bring on amateur artists, but they do better than us. So
yeah,
like your mother.
Yes, correct. So scale 1 to 10 of how excited you are to be at the second annual 10K Invitational this year.
I'm really excited. I mean, first of all, thank you guys for doing that. I mean, this money goes a long way for our space at the Children's Hospital. You know, for us, we were, you know, very proud that, our space was the only thing that was able to be used at the hospital during COVID. And it was, you know, nothing to do with any of the other spaces or anything they did wrong. It was just simply that nobody was allowed to leave their room. So luckily with the Zucker family suite and broadcast studio, we were able to push everything all to their rooms, and they were able to still have all their inactive games and still be a little bit a part of the suite while, you know, COVID was going on. So, you know, the good of that is that, you know, it was very useful. The negative is we burned through a lot more money than we thought we were going to during that time.
Right.
So events like this are huge and very helpful for us. We really appreciate you guys doing that. And thank you to everybody that's going to be there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm excited. I missed last year. I think it was a little bit later. I left for camp maybe.
It was in September. It was near the end of September. So.
Yeah. So I think I was already at camp, but this year I'll be, I'll be there. And I think I'm just driving around. I still have yet to touch my golf clubs this year, which is unfortunate, but it's going to be a great event. I'm excited for it.
Well, can you take a gander at which team you think got last place in last year's 10K Invitational tournament?
Was it yours?
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we could use you. I don't know. But
Are you guys not good golfers?
He's pretty good.
I'm a good golfer, but my back could only take so much.
Yeah,
that
makes sense.
But if you want to hit a few putts for us, we'd gladly take it.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I could probably do. Yeah.
Celebrity putts? I'm going to need that. Well, I should say, what was a contributor to that? It may or may not have been who is one of our sponsors there, the CBD.
Oh, yeah. Cultivated CBD.
Cultivated CBD.
Was a premium sponsor last year.
I may or may not have got what I thought was high off of some of the CBD gummies there. So... And that might have detracted my golf game a little bit, but I was having a great time. We were raising money.
For what it's worth, I'm not calling you out, but Tiger actually uses that for his professional events.
Really?
Yeah.
Like while he plays?
Yeah.
I had Phil do it too, where the squirt stuff.
Yeah, okay. And the gum that Tiger's chewing is actually CBD.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something.
And the rumor is that THC is in it as well.
Well, Jake seems to think so. He apparently gets stoned every time he does it. I've never felt that. I'm not even like a stoner or anything, but every time I've taken CBD, I just feel relaxed.
I don't know what it was.
Apparently that's what threw us off.
Because I'm the greatest golfer of all of us here, allegedly, so that just threw everything off. CBD.
That was it.
Yeah.
What's your prediction on how we finish this year? 36 teams, full tournament.
I'll give you 35th this year.
35th? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, at least.
It's improvement.
You're moving up.
Yeah.
You know, your studio's moving up.
Yep.
Your golf game's doing. I give you 35th.
Well, and
it's not too bad.
Yeah. We'll take that. The best bit about it is we're like, well, as the guys who organize the tournament, it'd be a bad look if we finished like really well, because it looked like, you know,
we're really
The other option is to do that and then just be good guys and just give the, you know, awards.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
okay. So we can
go about it that way too.
So or we give the prize money back to the charity.
Yeah.
Yeah, double charity, better. Guys. There you go.
See, that's why we didn't actually win last year, because we didn't want to try too hard and win first place and make it look sketchy or anything.
So at our golf tournament this year, I was actually with a group to start. I was with Paul Meat Sauce Lambert, and he was kind of the second celebrity, because then I ended up driving around. And so the group was like, yeah, we can't win, right? On like hole one. I'm like, no, we can. Like, we can win. We're just, you know, I don't know if we are, but we can try.
Right.
After about the second hole, I was like, oh, you know what, guys? Like, we can't win. But we had zero chance of winning. That was really what it came down to. Mm-hmm. I wanted to lift their spirits, make sure they had fun, like think they couldn't win because I was on their team. When really, we definitely could have. We were just really bad.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That was our team, too, that day. Like, we did not play well at all.
Yeah.
It also...
Scrambles are hard.
They are.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to swing for the fences. You're not playing, like, your normal game. You're trying to hit it as far as you can every time. And all you're doing is going for birdies, and that's never a good.
Yeah,
approach.
Subconsciously, you kind of don't give a shit if you're not the last person, because you're like, oh, someone else will get my back if I hit a bad shot. You don't concentrate. You just kind of swing.
That right. terrifies me, though, because like,
you gotta be the anchor.
Like Jack is usually the anchor here because he's the, you know, the best golfer in our group. And a majority of the time he'll just hit a, you know, stick one out there, you know, great shot. But then once in a while, you'll kind of slice it to the left or you know, you'll hit a bad shot like every golfer does. And then the next two golfers go and I'll be last. You're like, well, Jake, no, you need to be our savior here. I'm like, oh, no, this is where I'm even worse than I am if I'm just up there individually playing.
Yeah. But I make sure though. That if I'm playing in a scramble, I go first every time for that reason.
That's smart.
Then I can sit there in my head. I'm like, I'm just going to hit a normal shot. If I hit a bad one, it is what it is. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good.
Yeah.
But at least I know in my head it's not like a pressure shot, because that's going to make me even worse.
Well, and the best guy in a scramble is the one who hits first or second, hits the safe ball. So that I can just swing for the fences and I have no punishment if I miss.
Right.
But as the anchor, when it comes down to it, and it's like you look at your team and you're like, guys, if I don't hit this shot well, like we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then once you've said that out loud, you hit a bad shot. Like every time. There's no coming back from that.
Yeah.
It's a poor attitude.
Yeah. I usually am the safe shot guy. Like I'm just going to step up, hit an easy one, and then move on.
I love it.
And scrambles are scary, though. But okay. It's fun, though.
So if your prediction for us is 35th out of 36, what do you think it's going to take for us to get there?
Score-wise?
Yeah. Or just any advice
you have. Is par your friend?
We're never going to be mad with a par. I think...
No, like at the tournament, do you allow bogeys?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, bogeys the highest score.
Okay. Man, what were you last year?
Shit, I think we shot 769, maybe 70. It was rough. Although the three guys on my team,
if you would have said plus, that would have been really bad.
Yeah, no. I mean, we made a lot of pars and just a couple bogeys. We had like four or five birdies.
Okay, I'm gonna say 65.
Okay,
yeah,
65. I think we can do that 7 under.
Yeah.
Who? What did the winning team finish with?
Oh my
God. What was their score?
Probably like 22 or 21. Yeah, I was gonna
say, it's usually...
Jeez.
It's always the group that birdies every hole and eagles all the par fives.
Yeah, so if you were to do that on every single one, I think it's minus 24, somebody told me once.
Yep.
Is like the highest you can get.
Unless you like dunk out or albatross or hole in one, which...
Right. So if you just go birdies and eagles on par fives, you're at like minus 24.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the problem is we need to just avoid the bogeys. We need to take pars. We need to be like, okay, if we get a par, it's not the end of the world. And then attack when you have the chance for birdie.
Yeah. It's just hard in a scramble because you just feel like you have to get after it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
It's tough.
But it's going to be fun though. It's going to be at Victory Links. So have you ever golfed there?
I haven't.
Yeah.
No, I've heard it's a great course though.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually, they use it as qualifying for the 3M.
Yeah. They use it as qualifying and for like qualifiers for the US Open. I think they use it for like some amateur competitions. Like it's a really tough, I golfed it once earlier this year. It's pretty difficult. It's a pretty challenging course, but I mean, it's
a links course though, yeah, right? You just carve the ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Get away with that.
That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah. But it'll,
I'm excited for it. It'll be awesome.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. How would you feel? This may or may not be in the works, but how would you feel with the winner of this tournament getting a sponsor exemption into the Masters?
Are you still working on it?
Yeah, it may be in the works.
It may or may not be in the works.
There may have been some emails sent.
Sent to Augusta National.
Sent to the chairman.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you get a response, let me know.
Okay.
But, I mean, I like the idea. Can I be on the winning team then?
I've never played.
Well, we were going to give ourselves sponsor exempt as well, so we can bundle you into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Then I'm on board. I'll email somebody. Who do I got to email?
Yeah. I mean,
let me Google it.
Yeah. I think allegedly this is like we're discussing some very secretive internal.
I think historically this tournament hasn't done a sponsor exempt considering there's not really a sponsor, but, oh, it's Fred Ridley, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah, we may or not be in contact with Fred Ridley.
Fred Ridley. If you have a connection, let us know. We might need it. But yeah, no, it's going to be a great event. And folks, if you can't make the 10K Invitational, you can also give on your guys' website, right? Is it just give16.com?
Yeah, if you go to give16.com, we have all the info there where you know, you can't give directly to Give16, but you're going to give directly to the hospital.
Okay.
They'll give you all your receipts and everything, but you can do it all from give16.com. Absolutely.
Sweet. Well, you said you haven't golfed yet this year. Are you usually an avid golfer?
Yeah, I usually try to play quite a bit. I'm still rehabbing my groin injury from last year. It's getting, I feel pretty good. Like I probably could go play and be all right. But I'm at the point where like I could go play, you know, I've hit some shots when I bring out like Sophia, you know, my oldest daughter or Hendrix, whatever. And it feels okay doing that. But if I were to go play a full 18, you know, hitting, I mean, 85, 90, 95 shots, 100 shots, whatever it is, like it's not going to be good. You know, that amount of playing. So that's kind of why I've stayed away. You know, I probably could go play, you know, six holes with the kids or something, go play nine or something and be okay. But right now it's just not worth it.
Mm-hmm. So if you're rehabbing an injury like that, is there still like certain things you can do just to stay?
Honestly, I can do pretty much anything that feels okay. I mean, based on talking to, you know, the guy that does my rehab, my PT and everything. But golf is one of those things that it's my right leg. So, you know, just turning on that leg, you know, as a righty golfer, is probably the most uncomfortable position I can put myself in. So again, I probably could go play and be all right, but it's, like I said, it's just not really worth it right now. So I haven't had a whole lot of like extracurricular activities. It's mainly just hanging out with the kids, but I bring them out on the course and it's fun for me to do that. I mean, once you have kids, you kind of live vicariously through them anyway. So it's kind of fun to be out there with them.
Are any of your kids, showing any signs of being a future Tiger Woods at golf?
Sophia is really good. She's 12. She's on the junior PGA league, at Interlochen, and she does pretty well. She's fun to watch. She can hit the ball. She's tall and lanky, so she's got a nice swing. But she crushes the ball. Like she'll drive the ball 150, you know, 160, something like that for 12 years old. It's pretty good. So I think she's really good. Hendrix is a maniac. He's just out there. Yeah, I don't know what he's doing.
He's the big swinger.
He's just going for it. Yeah. He's all over the map, but he has fun. I mean, he loves being out there. He asked me to go every day. You know, so he loves being out there. He takes lessons twice a week now. He enjoys it. So Sophia, if she keeps going and she really enjoys it, I could see her on the LPGA for sure. Mm-hmm.
Love it. Yeah.
She could probably beat me.
I was going to say she could probably hit a tee shot further.
So it's pretty cool how they do it. They basically play every hole as a par four from 150 out is how they do it. And then the par fives are still par fives, but they play those from 175. And then how they do it from there is they do like classifications. So she can go, and once she can do that, par all the par fours and par fives from 150 and 175, then they'll move her back to 200 on everything.
Okay.
And you'll still play them at par fours and par fives. And then once you can par all of that, you can play the course from the ladies' tees.
Nice. Wow.
So it's kind of cool how they set it up that way.
It gives them a goal.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, hopefully by like 15, she'll be playing the ladies' tees, you know, would be kind of the goal.
Yeah.
And so she's doing pretty well so far, but we've never gone through the whole class. It's only through nine holes also, but we've never gone through the classification yet, but she's getting close to moving back to like that 200 point for sure.
I remember playing junior golf. That's kind of how they did it for us too as kids. Certain age group would be from 150 on. And it's crazy. That's actually a really good thing to teach kids because that is the most important range. It's not about hitting the long ball off the tee. It's not about, it's about approach, hitting your approach shot on the green and two putting, or, you know, if you are near the green chipping on and one putting, like it teaches you the most important part of the course, which is 150 and in.
Yeah.
It's my worst distance. So
man, I'm the same way. My irons are terrible.
Yeah.
Driving and putting, I'm actually not bad.
Yeah.
Irons absolutely god awful.
Mid-range wedge shots, I'm terrified of.
Yeah.
Like a 70-yard wedge shot where you're taking like a half swing. I never know how to hit it. I'm afraid of shanking it.
Those are tough.
Yeah.
Those are really tough. But what's cool for the kids is like until this year, Sophia was able to hit a drive on everything. You know, even the par threes from 130, she was hitting her driver. Now she actually has to start picking clubs. She can hit her driver too far. So she's got to be careful from 150. Like there's not many holes that she can hit. The par five, she uses her driver. That's it. Everything else, she uses a three wood or, you know, she'll use a long iron or something. So it's kind of fun to see her now like trying to figure it out because before it was just mindlessly like, okay, driver every time. Now she actually has to think about it and
think about distances, strategize.
So, you know,
pulling out the notebook.
Yeah,
looking, taking notes.
The yardage book.
Yep.
Yeah, because there's a couple holes. Like she hits, like right now, she hits a little bit of a fade every time.
Mm-hmm.
So any hole that goes left, she's like terrified of. So she hits an iron.
Plays
she
a can safe wall.
Yep. Exactly.
That's literally what I do because I hit a really big fade. And yeah, those dogleg lefts are terrifying. You just you poke an iron to the right side of it. And
yeah, and you're okay.
Yeah.
That. So that's kind of what she does. But it's fun to see them like. For me, I'm driver every time. I don't care what. I'm just going to figure it out.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Same here.
Scrip like, and rip it.
Yeah. I mean, I play golf to you know, try to hit good shots. Mm-hmm. I don't play to shoot low scores.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is kind of, you know, a little bit ass backwards, I think. Mm-hmm. But, like, that's kind of the way that I've always played is, like, I want to go out there and have fun. And, like, if I shoot a 90, but I have, like, five shots and I'm like, that was an awesome shot. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty happy with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Whereas if I go out and I play, like, a crazy boring game. Now, I've never done this, so that's why I claim, you know, I claim I wouldn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
But if, like, I went out and played a boring game and shot, like, an 80, I don't know if it'd be that great.
Yeah. It's just, like, pars every time and you're kind of scrappy and...
Yeah, like, yeah. You know, like the you know, the old guys at the country club where, like, mm-hmm. you just punch it up to the green and you
chip. Oh, that's such that's a boring way to
that's
play.
That's what I'm saying. Like, that's what all the guys at Interlock can do, and I claim that I would hate that.
Mm-hmm.
I've never actually tried it or done it. I'm not good enough to do it anyways, but I claim that I would hate it so that I just keep doing it the other way, and then I hit a couple good shots around, and I'm okay with it.
You want to be the guy that's hitting an immaculate shot from the woods. After you slice it off the tee, you're like, oh, dang it. Then you hit one right through the woods beautifully onto the green for no reason, and you sink it for birdie or par.
Yeah.
Instead of straight.
It's so much more rewarding than just putting it on the green and two putting for par every hole. Yeah, mm-hmm. Like, that was boring.
Yeah.
It's nice. It's convenient, but it feels way better when you rip a tiger stinger out of the woods.
For sure.
Cut it around the trees and then make par.
And I can pretend I can hit like a stinger fade out of the trees. I can't do that. I just accidentally, I'm hitting a poor shot on accident, and it just works out sometimes.
See, but that's why you're a good scramble guy. If you hit one in five shots good and like you're happy with that, like that's solid. That's
because I'm good with that.
Yeah, then you contribute.
I'm not a pro golfer.
Yeah.
No. Well, it's like I feel like my role in a scramble group, I think last year I say it every time, is I'm due for one long random ass putt. Like just for no reason, just it goes in almost every round. And I think last year I'm like, yeah, guys, I'm due for a random long putt though. And like on hole three just sunk like a 30 footer. Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, okay, well, we're using his ball. I'm like, well, that's the only one guy. So let's just calm down. But
yeah,
I did my job for the day.
That was probably for par too.
Yeah, I think it was for par. Because I remember I went up to putt it, you're like, and you were getting ready to maybe use your ball and or whatever, and I just went up and putted it, and it went in. We're like, oh, shit. Like,
take it.
I'm like, well, guys, this is the only one of the day, so.
Made the decision before we had a chance.
Yeah.
I had a hockey coach in Vegas that I used to golf with all the time after I got older, and he used to tell me that I wasn't good enough to get mad playing golf. And ever since he said that to me, I was like, that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like, you're not even good enough to get mad, so why are you getting mad? Because I used to get pissed off all the time hitting bad shots and this. He's like, you're not even – why are you getting mad? And he was like a two. You know, he was insane.
Mm-hmm.
And so – but he played like that old man style. 150 down the middle. He'd hit his hybrid or he'd hit driver off the deck. Then he'd chip up one putt from 3 inches.
And it would randomly – maybe not do that, but he was just more often than not just making pars easily like
every single time.
Yeah, that's just boring.
It was crazy. Like, I don't remember the last time he hit like one. Like, he used to get mad when he would hit it into the rough off from a drive.
The rough.
Well, he's one of those guys.
Yeah,
okay. I just love when I'm not in the trees.
I know.
I just love having a shot.
Me too.
Yeah, and so then he had this thing every single. His name's Larry Sanford, and then every single round he would. Whoever he was playing with, he would make a bet. He had a lefty driver in his bag. He would bet every guy like $20 that whoever could hit the furthest lefty drive. Mm-hmm. And whoever he played with most of the time were hockey players.
Mm-hmm.
And 90% at the time were lefties. I feel like every hockey player was a lefty for the longest time. And he would outdrive us every single time. And he would just take our money and basically paid for his golf for the day. And he'd move on.
There you go.
And he'd shoot his 74 and he'd go home and have couple beers and call it a day.
Yeah. That'd be it.
Yeah.
I could just retire. If I shoot a 74, I'm just going to be done with golf.
You should just quit.
Yeah.
Just go out while you're on top.
Did you ever break any clubs ever?
Oh,
you play golf?
Yeah, way too many.
Oh.
Yeah.
I broke my first one the other week and I was upset about it, but I'm like, well, I feel like this is one of many to come.
Yeah, when I first started playing, when I was living in Vegas in the summers, I was breaking them way too often. Like,
yeah,
and that's when I ended up playing with him, and I don't think I broke one, but I think I threw one.
Yeah,
and he's like, "You're not even good enough to get mad. Why are you mad right now?" Like, I, you know, like the best I've ever gotten is like to a 10 handicap. Like, so I'm not
right,
a good golfer. I'm okay. I can I can hit the ball, but I'm not like phenomenal. So he's like, "Yeah, why are you even getting mad? You're not even good enough to get mad." And ever since he said that, I've not broken one club.
Sometimes you just have to chuck them, though.
I know. There's times,
like stopped doing it for a while because I, as a kid, I hit it like a baseball bat against the ball washer and I shattered. And after that, I was like so traumatized at what I'd done, especially because like my parents paid for the club. So I felt really bad. I never did it for a while, but then after college, I kind of started throwing them again. And I don't do it often, but yeah, sometimes you just got to let it fly.
It's satisfying sometimes.
Especially if you've hit the same club consistently poor. It's like, this needs to be taught a lesson. You just chuck the fucking thing.
Yeah, 100%. Like it feels good to do it.
It does.
The worst one I've ever done, I remember, and it was purely by accident. Hit a bad like chip shot next to the green. In Vegas, every course, you don't walk anywhere. You're driving, you know, carts everywhere.
Yep. Yeah.
And, that was a rude awakening when I got to Minnesota too. People are walking the course. I was like, this is ridiculous.
It's psychotic.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Now, I actually started liking it a little bit, but not enough to like carry my own bag.
Right.
I'll use a push cart, and I know people are like, oh, losers use push. I'm like, I don't care. I'm not carrying my bag.
I'm not my own caddy.
Well, especially as a pro athlete, you get plenty of exercise.
I'm not doing that.
We're talking about guys who are on the couch 99% of the week and their wife yells at them, "You're carrying your clubs today." All right, fine.
Yeah, 100%. And so anyway, so I hit a bad shot and I just like turned around and like threw my club one-handed, and he was sitting in the cart, and the club went through the cart and hit the roof, shattered on the roof, and both pieces, one on top, one through the middle of the cart.
Oh my gosh.
Missed my brother's head by probably this much. It was my oldest brother's, Evan. And to this day, I remember watching this club like, oh no.
Yeah.
And it almost smoked him right in the head. And it was gone. That was it. It was like my 60-degree wedge. I don't know, something like that.
Yeah.
And it would have hurt bad.
Yeah, that would have done some damage.
In my head, I didn't even think. I just threw it.
Right.
And
As I
like turned around as it was breaking over the cart and almost hitting him in the head, I didn't even have time to say anything. He looked at me like he was going to kill me.
Yeah. I almost got hit by my dad, my dad's ball the other week. We were at Bluff Creek in Chanhassen, and my cart was just a little parked off to the left, and he's not too far, so he's like kind of diagonal to me. He's going for the green. I'm like, there's no way he's going to get close to hitting me. He's going to at least hit it straight or go slice. Nope. Belts it, almost like belts me in the head, and it hits the top of the cart and bounces up and into the woods. And I'm like,
see, but what? But when you have to say that to yourself, like, there's no way this is going to hit me, you know,
then it's going to happen.
You know you're in a bad spot.
Yeah.
That's when you drive directly behind
him. Yeah.
I play golf with where I refuse to be anywhere in front of them.
Yeah.
I'm like, this could go anywhere.
Yeah.
This could be my last day on earth.
You never know.
Golf is a dangerous game.
Yeah.
It can be very dangerous. When we were in Vegas, actually, back in March, we played at Vegas National.
Yeah, Las Vegas National. You ever play there?
Yeah.
I think it's just,
I feel like I have.
Just off the strip.
Yeah. And that's where Elvis used to live there.
Yeah.
On that course.
And allegedly Tiger has played that course, right? In like a junior tournament or something?
I bet he has.
There was like a plaque on like hole 8 that Tiger Woods had a hole in one here in like 1995 or something like that. Amateur championship. But
yeah, I believe that. And then that's where the movie Casino was filmed, with the airplane scene where they crashed the airplane.
Yeah. That was the course. Okay.
That's sweet.
Yeah.
Although I do got to say, they have those houses just off the left on a few of those holes. I'm pretty sure Jake and I hit the same house on a tee shot.
Yeah. One of the holes, they were like butted up on the left
literally
side.
It was like terrifying. 10 yards off the fairway. It's like, if you relatively pull this ball at all and you're 10 feet over the fence, like, you're going to hit a house.
Yeah.
I think it hit like the roof or something. You know, those houses are built like tanks if they're on golf courses. So
yeah.
They get hit.
A lot of those actually have like the garage doors over the windows.
Yep.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
That's smart.
Just to make sure.
That's smart.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bunker almost. Yeah, like, activated. What? You a doomsday prepper? No, I live on a golf course. Like, you got to wait for.
Yeah.
Balls coming in.
100%. I mean, I would never want to live on a golf course for that reason. Like, right. if you're at a tee box or something, like, cool, that's fine. But I've also always had this like mindset of like, if you live on a golf course and your backyard is there, like, you're not even allowed to be on your in your backyard.
No, you're just living
in, quiet the whole
you're
time.
You're living in fear,
right? Like you can't even be out there talking.
No, well,
if you have a pool, you can't be in the pool like splashing,
right? Because someone's going to get mad eventually.
Yeah.
What if? Like, well, there was a really strange incident. There was that one guy just walking his dog on the middle of the fairway.
Oh yeah,
and he was just being really slow about it. And we're sitting there waiting for him, and then he went around this corner. Like, okay, he must have went back into his yard. Turns out we both hit balls over in that direction. He was just right over the hill, still walking his dog on the golf course. It was really bizarre in Vegas. It's really bizarre.
Well, there's not a whole lot of grass in Vegas, so I wonder if that's why.
That's probably explains it.
Yeah, because you can't have grass at your house in Vegas unless you had it like 30 years ago.
Right, exactly. Really? Okay. Yeah, because it's all rock. It's all rock landscape, right?
They're in a drought, so a lot of people now have fake grass. But then I think you're allowed to have like, if your yard was as big as yours is at this house, it's like you could have this much grass, this table.
Really? That's it?
It's based on like square footage of your lot, you know?
You have just enough for a putting green.
Yeah, it's very, very small.
You might as well make a putting green.
There's like laws behind that?
Yeah.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah.
You can't just fill?
That's
nuts. Like the house that Carly and I had in Vegas, we had, it was like a 12 by, I don't know. No, like 10 by 15 patch of artificial turf in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Like it wasn't very big. Our yard wasn't very big. But yeah, like we thought about putting grass in, but we couldn't with that size. So we did artificial turf instead.
Yeah.
That was too much space.
That's nuts.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. And I know you said Vegas isn't a drought, but did you see the rain they had the other day? Was that like Thursday or Wednesday?
Yeah, that so it they have monsoon season every like end of July, early August.
Okay.
And it rains and there's massive flooding there every single time. Like you, driving down the streets, 2-3 feet of water in certain areas, like it happens a ton every year. It happens. But that's just because they don't get that much rain. So when they didn't design everything to drain properly.
Right. Cause it's, if you're never going to get it, like it's not worth it.
Exactly. So they didn't design all that stuff to drain properly. So it just ends up in the middle of the streets. Like I've watched cars get taken by floods just down the street.
Right.
Yeah.
Toyota Camrys, like just picked up by the water.
See ya.
Just gone.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. Well,
that makes sense though, because I remember we were out in Vegas with you guys for the power trip like a year ago now.
Yeah.
And I think it rained like two of the days, and I was like, it didn't rain hard, but it was sprinkling, and I was like, this is weird. I've never seen this in Vegas before.
I believe it. Yeah. That was the end of July. You're right.
Yeah. Yep.
And so it's monsoon season, but last year was the lightest monsoon season they've ever had.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
The least amount of rain they've ever had.
Jeez.
In a long, long time. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right.
So
has it ever snowed in Vegas? To your knowledge?
It does every once in a while, every few years. Mm-hmm. I think last year they got like a half inch.
Okay.
But they can't even plow the roads there because they have reflectors on the street that are, you know, a half inch to an inch off the ground to separate the lanes. You know, that's what they use instead of just paint.
Yep.
So you wouldn't even be able to plow the road. They don't even have plows. They have them at the airport.
Yeah.
They have a couple. But
so is it like Washington, D.C., where if it snows at all, they just shut down everything?
Or Texas?
Yeah, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
I can't even imagine.
Everyone has rear-wheel drive cars.
Right.
They're a little bit cheaper than all-wheel drive or, you know, four-wheel.
There's no reason to have, unless you're going like in the mountains or
something. Even if it rains in Vegas, though, the amount of accidents goes up by, you know, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Because people have no idea. They're like, what is this?
Yeah.
How am I supposed to drive in this?
Like the Vegas plane.
Yeah. In Vegas, drivers are insane as it is, but then nobody learns how to drive in that. It's always dry there.
Right.
So, and it's always decently warm. You know, even in the winter, it's 50 during the day.
Right.
So you don't have a lot that is going to deter you from driving like you're a NASCAR racer.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like you're... And, you know, it's just another world driving out there.
Well, I went down to when I've been out to San Diego.
That's our other roommate, Donnie.
That's houseboy Donnie, getting back from work. When I've been out to San Diego a few times, I've been out there, the people are maniacs. Like, I think it's probably the same kind of atmosphere. Like, they're going, if you're going under the speed limit, or if you're going the speed limit, you can legitimately get pulled over for, like, slowing traffic or something like that, because everybody's going 90 or almost 100.
Cali's another level too. With just that traffic there is insane, and people are on another level, whereas Vegas doesn't have that kind of traffic. They're starting to get there though, because they've had so many people move there, but at least they were able to design the highway systems a little bit better. just because they had to, you know, they're still finishing some of them. Like, that's how new it is out
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
But Vegas, people drive fast. I mean, I was taught when I was learning to drive in Vegas to count to five when the light turns green. Because someone's still coming every time. Like, light turns green, one.
That's scary.
Two. Okay, I can go up by three. Yeah.
Do you, so Vegas drivers are significantly worse than Minnesota drivers?
Worse is a different, I don't know. I don't know.
Pretty close.
That's a tough way to put it. Mm. They're reckless in Vegas. Here, they're
stupid,
borderline idiotic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, if someone thinks, if they don't have an opinion on Minnesota drivers, just try to go merge into traffic during rush hour.
Yeah.
It's an absolute shit show.
Especially on a zipper merge.
Oh, gosh.
There's no such thing here.
No.
It's just line up
yeah.
as yep. far as you can possibly line up.
Yep.
And then try to make sure nobody can get in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And just make it worse for everybody.
It's every man or woman for themselves.
Yeah. It's real bad. Yeah. I've never seen the lines ever. Now, I'll say that they tried to design that whole like loop system.
The roundabout?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As like a positive. That makes everything way worse.
Right. Because no one knows how to use them. Like the education behind how the roundabout works. Clearly, some people didn't learn it.
Well, no, I'm talking about the high, like on ramps and off ramps of highways.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You're talking yep. freeway loops.
Yeah.
Yes. The whole four. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
The problem is that you have about the size of this table to actually get on the freeway or off.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then everybody stops mm-hmm. and then it's literally a slow motion, like, okay, we're going to cross here.
Yep.
Whoever thought that two cars need to cross to go.
Yep.
Was yeah, a good idea.
That's the zipper merge.
Yeah, the zipper merge concept.
Someone goes out while someone else goes in. Every time I enter one, I'm terrified.
They overestimated humanity.
Someone's gonna screw this up, and you have to just like
yeah,
you need like chemistry with the other drivers to like know
right
to time it out.
Yeah, I started for a little while when I first got here, like just driving down the side of the road because somebody's gonna get over eventually. I don't know if they're gonna try to speed in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
Or get behind me, but I just go straight in like what's not a lane
because mm-hmm.
every one of them has it.
Right.
And then I'll get over some point.
Yeah.
I've changed that now that I've been here long enough. But like when I first got here, that's what I would do because
yeah.
people were absolute maniacs.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're insane. But really quick, going back to Vegas, what do you think of the F1 having a race there next
year?
That
circuit's going to be sweet.
Yeah.
I got into F1 last year. Our team did like a pool.
Yeah.
And it was really fun, like getting into it. So I've started following it a lot more. That circuit's going to be really interesting because the strip is only, I mean, three lanes, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a median. So then the one side is going to be the stands,
yep. mm-hmm.
you know, which would be like the Paris side.
Yeah.
And then call it like the Bellagio side is going to be the actual track. But like, I think that goes to show how narrow those tracks are in general.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like two cars next to each other is going to be almost wheel.
Yeah, there's going to be a wreck probably.
Yeah.
Just based on how tight it is compared to,
yeah.
I mean, like at least like some of these other Grand Prix, they have, you know, like the Hungarian one, for example, this weekend, there's super wide shoulders where
yeah.
you can, you know, if you screw up, you can come back in. But
for sure.
Vegas, you're just hitting the wall.
Yeah.
Could
yeah.
be like Monaco 2.0.
That's exactly what it's going to be. It's a street circuit. It's going to be really cool though. I mean, looking at the way it was drawn up, I can't remember exactly, but it cuts down like Tropicana and then back, you know, it's going to be a cool setup.
That's crazy though. When I'm like looking into it, how they're going to like the logistics of it. They're just literally going to shut down the strip. Like I feel like very busy areas to do it. But I mean,
I've seen the strip shut down one time my entire life. And that was when Tarkanian, the basketball coach there, passed away. They shut down the strip.
Wow.
And they did like a, not a memorial, but like they honored him
procession
essentially.
Procession kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and they had a few cars drive down, but it was completely shut off. That's the only time I've ever seen it shut down.
That's crazy.
So it's going to be, I mean, I'll say this. The casinos, they're happy because there's going to be that many people there.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pissed because it's going to be much harder. Like you can't, anybody that's been to Vegas, you can't just walk casino to casino. It's
right.
not that
no.
easy.
Right? No.
It seems like, oh, there's Bellagio, but that's like.
It's always further away than it looks.
You see the top of the building. You're like, let's walk there. Now I'm dead. By
20
the time
minutes
you get
later,
there.
You're yeah. just like halfway yeah. there.
Exactly. Like they're saying that they're going to finish that light rail to where it's basically going to go from the mall all the way through to. The Luxor.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Or Mandalay Bay. Actually, it ends at Mandalay Bay now. But it, right now, it doesn't even it does make it a city center in Bellagio. That's where it ends, is Bellagio. It's like they've got a long way to go from next year. So there's no way it's going to be done. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be the only way to get through. And then if you're on the other side of the strip, you've got no chance.
Nope.
You have to, you know, you have to walk on the other side.
Oh,
just because there's no light rail over there.
Yeah.
So it'll be a logistical nightmare. Yeah. Now the casinos are going to love it because it's thousands of hundreds of thousands of people that come in for that.
Right.
But at the same time, not like the taxi companies are going to be losing their minds.
It's also going to be like, I feel like the most touristy tourists that they've ever seen. Cause you're probably going to get people from Europe who are going to fly in for that. Mm-hmm. Like some of the more hardcore fans.
Yeah. But that's pretty normal for Vegas.
I suppose they don't really have a cap on.
Yeah. Like
what they consider crazy.
No. Yeah. Cause I mean, the amount of, you got to think like Formula One aside, the amount of UFC fights, boxing,
That's true. Concerts. They always have something going on.
It's the fight capital of the world, but it's one of the entertainment capitals of the world. Yeah. I mean, with New York and London and some of the other big cities, like if you have entertainment, Vegas has it every time, no matter what it is. That's why it was only a matter of time till hockey, the NFL, basketball is going to be there.
Yep.
MLB is going to be there. Yep. They're all going to be there at some point.
Right.
Especially now that hockey did it. But then when you look at Formula One, you look at, you know, every major event that they have in the world, Vegas has hosted it at some point or will host it at some point.
Yeah. Right. So you're an F1 guy. Do you have a favorite team or driver?
I'm a Lewis Hamilton guy.
Okay.
Yeah. Mercedes. I love it. I think he's phenomenal. I mean, he's one of those guys that's just generational talent, right? Yep. Like I'm kind of a sucker for that. Like Tiger Woods, like any of those type guys, like I'm a LeBron fan. You know, I was a huge Kobe fan. You know, just because for me, like being in the sport, you know, like I was always a big Crosby fan before, like just because that talent comes around so few, like so little.
Right.
It's crazy to be able to witness it in our lifetime. So for me, Lewis Hamilton's that guy.
Yeah.
So when I got into it, I don't know why I've never liked Verstappen.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about him.
He's kind of a villain.
Yeah. I don't like him.
Kind of looks like a villain.
He's always winning, I feel like. He's like always in the top podium
him and Lewis essentially switch places kind of over the, I mean, not last year, I guess last year they were battling for it right till the end, but this year,
Verstappen's. And the way that Verstappen won that last year, I think was a complete scam. Like,
yeah, that was nuts.
That was the worst ending to a race I've ever seen. When Lewis, you know, led for the last 55 laps and then all of a sudden somebody crashes and with one lap to go, you're going to make a rule that has never once happened in the history of Formula One and just, you know, basically hand Verstappen the title.
Yeah.
Like it was completely insane.
It's absolutely wild.
Yeah. That's never once happened in the history of Formula One. All of a sudden it's like, oh, okay, we're going to do this just because it's TV ratings.
And one of the biggest races of all time.
Right. And there's never been a race like that in the history of Formula One.
Yeah.
And they decided to do that. But
you
know, those are the situations and those decisions in the moment are impossible to get right.
Right. You know, I mean, people would have been mad on both sides.
Right, because if you did it the other way and you let the safety car go through the end of that race, people are going to say, well, that was the most boring finish to a race of all time.
Yeah.
You just handed Lewis Hamilton the title. When realistically, that's the way it should have gone. But that's why they were trying to get rid of. They wanted the, you know, the other. And it worked out good for the, you know, well for the sport.
Right.
But they almost lost Hamilton to it, right? He almost retired.
I wouldn't doubt it. Yeah. Right? How do you come back from that?
Yeah. Like, that would have been his eighth title to make him the winningest driver of all time, passing Schumacher. I mean, that's pretty big time, you know, deal. And so he seems to, you know, be racing better as of late, but the start, Mercedes struggled for
sure. He's getting there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Shifting gears back to hockey. Cause you're a hockey guy.
Every once in a while.
Sometimes when he chooses.
But, you said you sustained a groin injury. When you sustained that, did the NHL label that lower body injury?
Oh, yeah, always.
Yeah. Why do they do that? Do you know why they do that? They just do upper and lower body, and they don't disclose
really anything. In hockey, they worry about targeting injuries.
Okay.
More so than any other sport. I mean, it's one of those things where you could get away with it a lot easier in hockey than you can in a lot of other sports because it's so fast. So the NFL, you know, you can tell if someone's targeting a knee, you know, or targeting something. Plus, in the NFL, like, if someone breaks a hand, like, you put a club on their hand and they're okay, right? Like, we've all seen that.
Yeah. And they just go around hitting people with it.
Oh, jeez.
It's a cast, right? Yeah. Whereas hockey, you can't do that.
Right.
So, like, I remember years back playing for the Wild, I broke my thumb in the playoffs against St. Louis the year that we beat them in 5. I broke my thumb game one, and they knew it because it cut my thumb. So I remember I got back to the bench. I was holding my hand over the boards like this. Didn't even realize it, but the glass was right here in between the benches.
Oh.
So like the guys saw my thumb, and then it was like, it was pretty easy to tell, like my thumb was mangled. It was literally turned this way.
Oh my God.
And bleeding. Like it was nuts.
Yeah.
So every single face off the rest of that series, 100% of them, I got slashed in the thumb.
Oh my God.
Like it was a guarantee, but what are you going to do as the league?
Right.
Yeah. Right. So it was I didn't even have a disclosed injury at all, but they just saw it. They knew.
Right.
And, you know, I remember when Chris Porter signed like the next year here, he was on the team that year. He's like, oh no, we had no idea. I'm like, I've never once been slashed like that on a face-off in my career. Yet every single face-off, I got hit in the thumb.
The same exact spot.
100%. It was my bottom hand.
Yeah.
Right? Like how easy is that for a righty, right winger to just go like this every single time?
Easy.
Every time. So for hockey, it's a lot easier to do that. And, you know, with the amount of hits that we take, the amount of speed in the game, it's impossible for a ref to stop it. It's impossible for the league to stop it. You know, if somebody has a hurt shoulder and you know it's a shoulder, I'm going to finish a check on you every single time.
Right.
That shoulder is going to give out at some point.
Hey, right. I'm just checking you, bro. Right? It's legal.
It's just strategy. Right.
Yeah.
Like when we played the Rangers this year, we knew that Charlie Lindgren, we don't know exactly what it was, but it was either an ankle or a foot that he hurt in game one. We knew it. He tried to come back. It was the double overtime game. Like it was all speculation, but we were 100% sure it was his left foot, left ankle, something of that sort. And so our thing was like, if you're against him, you have to cut back every single time.
Right.
Because he can't move. He can't catch up to you.
Right.
And there's nothing he can do about it. So every single time, if you watched in double overtime or, you know, single overtime when you're in that game and then the rest of that series, every time we played against Charlie Lindgren, somebody cut back.
Yeah.
And he was so slow to get up there, but there's nothing he could do.
Yeah.
You know, like when you're injured, it's so hard. So it's easy to target that stuff when you're playing, especially in a playoff series.
I think it's funny. People, you know, they talk about how upset they were as Vikings fans that the Saints were going after and after Brett Favre that game and like, oh, it's such a shame. I'm like, you're sitting here like, oh, it happens every game in the NHL. Yeah.
It happens
part of the game though, you know, I mean, it probably happens more often in the NFL too.
For sure. Obviously. 100% it does. Like that's the problem with the NFL. Like if someone has broken ribs, if you know a quarterback has broken ribs, are you going to let up on a hit ever?
No.
No.
Are you going to take a 15-yard penalty for landing on the quarterback one time in the first quarter? Absolutely you are.
It's just strategy.
Why wouldn't you? You have 17 games now. But like if Cousins hurts his ribs and he gets landed on by I don't know.
Aaron Donald. Yeah.
Right? He's not going to be the same for the rest of that game. I don't care what you shot him up with. I don't care what medicine he has in his body.
Yeah.
It's not going to help.
No.
There's no chance.
So that's the reasoning behind like undisclosed injury.
Yeah.
So that other teams can't target.
It's for player safety, essentially. Safety.
Yeah, that makes total sense.
Yeah, so the players love it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because then it's like it's upper body, lower body. Now, there's times that like when I had my surgery on my groin, they said that I had, you know, successful surgery to, you know, fix a groin injury, right? Mm-hmm. So they stated it then.
Mm-hmm.
Surgery, the teams have a choice whether they say it or not. 99% of the time they do. But at that point, like no one's going to target you at that point to where it's like, okay, like now you're just being a dick. Like,
yeah, that's a low blow after you've gone through
the
time and the energy to have surgery. So
there's a respect level too, right?
Yeah.
So there's a different respect level with like an injury that you know someone's just hurt with that you can exploit to help you win a game versus like trying to re-hurt somebody,
right?
You know, like you're not trying to injure anybody, but if it's going to make them uncomfortable to where they're going to turn over the puck and you score a goal and win a game, of course you're going to do it.
Right.
But to a level that is respectful of the game and like, you know, respectful of the players too.
Mm-hmm.
So there is a certain aspect of that with like the player side. It's almost like the code, right?
Right.
You know, exactly. You're not going to go too far.
The bro code.
Yeah. Like you're not going to go over the line.
Yeah.
But if it's going to help you win a playoff game, of course you're going to do it.
Right. I think this concept is funny is if guys try to do it off the ice, you know, they obviously come out and disclose the injuries, you know, after the season, after the playoffs are done. It would be funny if a certain player, like say yourself, had a shoulder injury, but you obviously, you know, kept it secret during the playoffs. But then they're like, oh yeah, he was dealing with a left shoulder injury.
And one of the players, it'd be funny if like another player you're playing in the playoffs is like, hey, let's go out for a beer sometime. And he shows up, hey, buddy.
gives you a really hard hug off the ice.
Good to see you. Yeah, we're starting to do this off the ice now, bro.
Yeah, I mean, typically off ice, like hockey-wise, I don't know how it is with football, but I've never had any issues with any player off the ice. Never once. Yeah. Like, even somebody that I've fought in the league, like, never once. Yeah. It's always been respectful. That's something about hockey that, you know, obviously I'm biased, but it is so special about our game. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen, like, the old Twitter beef with, like, basketball players. Like, the John Morant thing this right. year, right? Like, things like that. I've never once seen that in hockey. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's funny. I've seen videos of guys in hockey where like they just get done fighting each other, and one of them's mic'd up, and they both skate to the penalty box. He's like, "Hey, we're still doing workouts this summer, right? Yeah. How the kids doing? They're good. Going into second grade now. Oh, that's great to hear, man. After they just beat the shit out of each other.
Yeah. I mean, perfect example. Like this year, I fought Trevor Van Riemsdyk when we were playing Washington, and he hurt his hand in the fight. He left the penalty box, went and got, you know, did something, came back, and like I was asking him how his hand was in the box, like,
yeah,
you know, how's your hand, buddy,
right? Especially in the regular season, like, you don't want anybody to be hurt, you know. And he's like, hey man, hope the groin's doing well. Like, it's kind of one of those things, like, in hockey it's just the way it goes. That's just normal for us. And, you know, obviously I'm far from a fighter,
right?
But, you know, the guys that do are typically like the nicest guys out there,
right?
For sure. You know, like Ryan Reeves is a guy that if he's barreling down on a defenseman he knows, or somebody, like, he rented my house, and I remember we played him in Vegas that year that he was renting our house, and like he was coming to hit me, and he's like, Zucks, I'm coming. You know, so like I knew, like, you know, there's kind of things like that that happen that are, you know, kind of just part of the game.
Yeah.
Well, is Evander Kane as big of an ass as everybody makes him out to be?
I don't know Evander Kane at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know him. There's a lot of stuff that I dislike about the situation.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to talk about him individually because I've never met him.
Right.
I've never even met him. But I've heard a lot. I mean, everyone's heard the stories of Evander Kane. Yeah. I've heard some that are, you know, very over the line. You know, I think there's stuff that's absolutely more blown up about
exactly.
it. But a lot of it, like the one reason why I kind of always had like a weird thought of him. Did you ever see that picture of him with the money on his back?
Yeah, like, he's like in Vegas or something, and he's
that was actually at his penthouse in Vancouver.
Oh,
so when he was playing there.
Oh wow.
Or no, he wasn't. When he's from Vancouver.
Okay.
So he had like this crazy penthouse there, and there was a picture of him doing push-ups out the window, and you can see like downtown Vancouver, and there's like $100,000 cash on his back. And like ever since I've seen that picture, I was like, I don't like this guy.
Yeah, yeah, right.
But again, I can't really say that because I've never met him.
Right.
Like, he might be a really good dude. I have no idea. Edmonton had no problem re-signing him.
I was gonna say,
right? Yeah. He's had some issues, but you know, the San Jose stuff, I don't know if, you know, obviously the relationship issues go both ways, right?
Yeah.
There's two sides of the story.
Mm-hmm.
There's definitely, you know, there was the gambling stuff, there was the domestic violence stuff. Like, there's so many different areas of that were so wrong. So I'm not going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, I'm siding with his girlfriend at the time, like, because of his past, right? You have to do it that way. But at the same time, like, I've never met him, so I can't necessarily say too much, you know, negative about him. Cause again, he might be a great guy. Like, I've heard that about Steve Ott.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Steve Ott, I hate Steve Ott. Him and I have, every single time I've ever played against him and I have gotten into some absolute battles.
Yeah.
Like, we played St. Louis that year. That was the year that I broke my thumb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the things that he said to me were so ruthless that I will not repeat to anybody.
No. Yeah.
And it was like, I remember, like, I would murder this guy probably not feel bad about it.
Yeah, right.
But then I talked to people, they're like, oh, the Otter's the best.
Yeah.
You know, great assistant coach now. Like, people love him.
Right.
But, you know, him and I just had it out for each other. And I bet you if I met him, he'd be a great guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just one of those guys, though.
Well, like Gage and Trevor, who do our UND hockey podcast, the Has-Beens, they talk about guys like that. They're like the goons who fight everyone. They're criminals on the ice, but they're good civilians. Like, they're good people off the ice, but they're just absolute psychos.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, there are certain people that are just, you know, again, Reeves is Derek Englund is one of the best examples I have. Like, that guy absolutely murders people on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And him and I, you know, his wife, Melissa, and Carly became really good friends in Vegas. And they're unbelievable people. He's the nicest guy you'll ever meet. and he will literally break your face.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. then after he'll say, hey, can I like help you fix it? You know? Like he's one of those guys.
I'll pay for it.
Come yeah. on. Yeah. But then there's people that are like, you know, that are assholes in a completely different way that has nothing to do with the game of hockey. And those are the ones that you typically have a worse time with. You know?
Right. Right. I'd imagine there's probably a pretty good mix of both. You get a lot of both.
Yeah. You know what? I've had a lot more of like the Anglin type in my career. Like the 99% of them are that way, but there is the 1% that's the opposite.
Right.
You know, there's guys, and I don't really want to go into it, but there's guys I've played with and I'm like, you're just a complete asshole. I hate you. Like, I just don't like you.
Yeah.
But that's every job, every profession.
Yeah.
Right.
Every sport. Doesn't matter what you do, there's going to be that. And that's just kind of the way it goes.
Yeah.
Is there a guy currently, or was there a player that even maybe formerly played that, like, you were scared, almost scared shitless to play against? Or was it kind of, you just went out there just with the mindset of, I don't care if someone gets in my face, but.
Man, I mean, that's tough. I remember Matt Green in LA was an absolute giant. Like, he was a guy, if he got a hold of you, like, and those cross-checks were very acceptable then, especially for a guy like that. Like when he would, I got cross-checked in the arm one time. I couldn't feel my arm for like 3 weeks.
God.
Like,
jeez.
Guys like that were just mutants to play against. But I came into the league in the new era, right? Where it favored my game, like the speed and that. Yeah. Now it's transitioned even more, like to a whole nother level. But I remember, you know, guys like Zen and Kanopka when I came here, like we had a pretty old team my first year, you know, with Kanopka, Stoner, Koivu, you know.
Was Bugard on the team?
No,
I think he was
Bugard. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Matt Cullen though.
Yep.
Pierre-Marc Bouchard.
Was Matt
Backstrom,
Cook. Yep. Yeah, he was.
Yeah, like we had Heatley, Setoguchi. Like that was my rookie year.
Yeah.
So like we had a really old team, and so I feel like I got a pretty good aspect and idea of like what the old school locker room was.
Yeah.
It is a complete flip 180 now. Like it's completely changed, and I'm for it. Like I think it's better now than it was. But, you know, I was scared to be in the locker room when I first got there. You know, like, I was scared to talk, you know, and I still probably talk too much, you know, like, at the time. Like, it was just, but you just don't know. Like, that's the stuff that nobody can ever teach you before you get there. You just got to learn.
Well, I remember you told us the heater stories about just the team dinners. And if you're a rookie, how you had to go.
You didn't have a choice. Yeah. Once a month.
Bottle of tequila and he'd be the first guy on the ice the next day.
This guy. And it was game day every time. It had to be the night before a game. And that was his way of like christening us like into the league. Like you have to, you know, you have to go and get drunk at my house.
Yeah.
And you're going to show up and you're going to learn how to play. And those, I remember I had, you know, for the eight months, those eight games were the worst eight games of my season every single time. I can't do it. Yeah. There are certain guys I know, I can picture a few, like, that are some of the best hungover players I've ever seen. There was a guy that I played with in the Wild. There was a guy I played with on the Wild, one of our best players, and I won't say his name, but is one of the best hungover players I've ever seen. You know, we call it playing guilty, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The whole point of it is like you don't do it and hide it. That's the point. So like if you're going through a slump, there's guys that do it. There's guys I play with now that do it.
Yeah.
If you're going through a slump, you can't figure it out. That's what you do. You go out, you get absolutely shit faced and you come to the rink the next day. You make sure that everybody knows. You have to have some good stories with it, whatever it is. And the stories don't have to be, you know, about girls. It's just, hey, I was out till 5 a.m.
getting plastered.
Right.
Yeah.
Like I sat at a speakeasy and sat by myself, didn't talk to a single person till 5 a.m. Like that's still a pretty funny story.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're playing like Colorado Avalanche the next night or whatever it is. So there was a guy here I played with that he would do it once a month if he wasn't playing well. You know, if he had like two or three bad games in a row, it's like, I'm going out every single time.
You should almost just say like, instead of going out, I'm hitting the reset button.
Yeah, exactly.
It did something to reset.
There's other coaches though. Like there's coaches in the league that firmly believe in it. Tortorella is one of them. Like he talks about it every single year and the media jumps all over him. Oh, you're telling your guys to get drunk? No, I'm telling the guys to play guilty is all he says.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the whole point of it is like, if the team knows that you just did that and you show up and you don't play well, they're going to be pissed.
So you got to kick it into a new gear.
Yeah. You got to figure it out.
Yeah.
So, and especially if you do it to yourself, right? Yeah. For us with Heater, it was like, it was a well-known thing.
Yeah.
Like this is just what it is.
Yeah.
And at least there was like 10 of us that year, right? Like our rookies that year were like Niederreiter, Granlund, Kemper, Coyle, me, Brodine, Dumba, Johan Larsson, like at any given time, all these guys were up, you know, right. Matt Hackett. You know, we had a lot of young guys that at any point in time could be up.
Mm-hmm.
Scandella, you know, yep. I think Spurgeon would go with us every once in a while. Dumba every once in a while. Like, so that's just, we had like at any given time, 5 to 10 rookies.
Yeah.
And so you just didn't have a choice. No. And so you knew, at least you had a group with you. Halla, yeah. Right? Yeah. Eric Halla. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I like, it's so funny how some guys can handle it and some guys can't. I can't. Like, I do not do well with it.
Yeah, I would 100% not be able to do that at all.
Yeah.
And this isn't anywhere near close to the NHL, just a, you know, a level below it, but I still play beer league, and I actually played Sunday hungover. And I play goalie, so I don't know if that's different, but it's brutal. I don't know if I can
it's terrible.
It. I was hungover, and I'm like, I don't, when you say NHL guys who are playing at the highest level of hockey in the world, playing hungover, it just baffles me. And some guys are just good at it.
Yeah, and it doesn't happen often. Right.
Right,
like
right.
This is like,
no, yeah.
You know, for those guys, like it's a couple times a year max. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And you're doing it like typically by design, you know, mm-hmm. like there are certain times that sometimes it can get away with you, you know, get away from you.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You don't realize it. And all of a sudden, like it happens. That I've never had that happen to me personally, but I know some guys that it happens to more often than not. You know, you end up in LA and some guys are like, oh, let's just go out for a drink quick. And then
not
in LA.
Turns into bar like, close.
There was a guy on our team last year. It was the first time playing back in the city he had just gotten traded from. And he met a friend and then, you know, another friend ended up seeing him at the bar and said, oh, let's, you know, go to this place and have another one, meet my friend. And, you know, and then it was like 4:30 in the morning. One of our healthy scratches saw him out at like 4:30 in the morning. And so he came, like told the story, you know, because if you know you're a healthy scratch, like you're one of the extras, like those guys go out more often than not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because why wouldn't you? Like, right. You know, you're not playing. Enjoy the cities. You're a young guy. You don't have a girlfriend. You're single. Like, enjoy those times and enjoy the cities. And why wouldn't you? Nobody's going to hold that against you. But he ended up seeing that guy out at like 4:30.
Yeah.
And he played the worst game I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. He played the worst hockey game, I think, in the history of the league. But that happens sometimes.
This might explain why 3 Florida Panthers players were seen out the night before the elimination game.
I don't believe that story.
You don't think was true?
No. Tabloid?
No. Yeah, I don't believe that. I think... Like, here's the thing, guys, this is one thing that I will say, like, there's no chance those guys were out the night before an elimination game when they were basically the number one seed, like
President's Cup
like
winners.
Yeah. Like, they were so good. There's no chance. There's no way. Now, the other side I'll say to this is like, it's very normal to go out and grab a bottle of wine at dinner,
right?
Not for yourself, but like guys do it all the time, right? Like, every dinner we go to as a team, guys have beers or grab a bottle of wine. You're adults. You're allowed to do that.
Yeah.
That's not going to affect your game. Like, when we have a team meal, the team buys us beer and wine for those dinners. Like, that's just a normal thing. And then you're, as a professional and an adult, you're supposed to monitor how much you have.
Yeah.
You don't have a full bottle by yourself. It's that simple. So I'm not surprised if somebody in the tabloids saw them out at dinner and had a bottle of wine or had some beers or cocktails. Like, you know, I know guys that don't like beer and wine and have a cocktail. Who cares?
Right.
That's fine. But again, to a respectable level. So I personally didn't believe that story.
Yeah, I know. I saw that come out too. And I was like, okay, if you're especially on an elimination game and you were the number one team going to the playoffs, like that makes no sense. Like that's not a time to throw in the towel.
Right. And the way that, you know, Tampa didn't have Braden Point, they weren't playing that great. Like, mm-hmm. They barely got by Toronto. Then they're going to play these guys who absolutely spanked their first round opponent.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I can't remember who they played. But
Second round?
No, the first round.
Tampa Bay?
No, Tampa beat Toronto in 7. But Florida,
they beat the Capitals?
Oh, they beat the Caps, right, in 5.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, it was not, or maybe it was 6 actually. But regardless, like, it wasn't that close of a series, even though it was, you know, 6 games. It still wasn't that close of a series. Like, they could have come back on Tampa because Tampa wasn't playing that well. And as they kept going, they got better, right? Mm-hmm. By the third round, they were clicking on all cylinders and they smoked, I don't remember who they played now in the conference finals.
The Rangers.
It was still 7.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right. But like, that was kind of a lopsided series.
Yeah.
You know, Like,
it's a tough series without Igor.
Right.
And that.
Exactly. You know, and so that's kind of the way that, honestly, our series was kind of that way with New York too.
Yeah.
Like, we dominated that series. And just, you know, it just, when it came down to it, we couldn't close it out. But regardless, you know, going back to the Florida thing, like, they felt like they could come back in that series because Tampa wasn't firing on all cylinders at that point. And, you know, so I don't personally believe that story.
Well, speaking of having bottle of wine to yourself, if I could put money on a player that potentially did this, I think you were on one of the teams he was on, or he was only on the team for like half a season. Ilya Bryzgalov.
Yeah.
Weren't you on 2014?
Yeah.
He seemed like he'd be the guy to do that. Probably wasn't, but he was a character.
I could be wrong, but I think he's sober.
Really? Okay.
I think he is. But he was one of the most odd guys to that point. All the way until I got to Pittsburgh, he was the only Russian I ever played with.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which was odd. Yeah. Like, Minnesota historically had zero Russians. Mm-hmm. I don't know if Chuck Fletcher didn't like him or what, but we had no Russians ever. And so, yeah, Malkin was the, other than Bryzgalov, Malkin was the first Russian I ever played with.
Yeah.
You know, and Briz was not the typical Russian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, Evgeny Malkin is through and through exactly everything you've heard of, like, a Russian hockey player, that's Evgeny Malkin.
And stereotypes and fighting bears and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's Evgeny Malkin. Like, the craziest skill in the world. He works his bag off when he's on the ice, but when he gets off the ice, it's like, get me out of here. What am I doing? Like, I'm here to play hockey, and I'm here to win championships and, you know, win scoring titles. But if you want anything more from me, leave.
Yep.
Don't even ask.
No.
Like, hey, you want to come on my podcast? No.
Yeah. No.
Can you do media
no explanation?
Today? No. Hey, G, you want to go to dinner? No. Right?
Like, to play hockey.
Yeah. Like, the only time I've ever gotten Gino to text me back actually was yesterday. It was his birthday. I texted him and he said, thank you. So I got that back. But then one time, like last year, I told him I was going to buy him sushi. And and so he sent me a sushi order. That was like the only time G's like ever text me back.
Oh, wow.
That's just kind of like a Russian thing.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. It was minimal communication.
Yeah. Like, and he's not doing it to be rude. Like, it's just G.
Yeah.
Just who he is.
And then Briz was the exact opposite. I just remember during that time, like, they're seeing his interviews, and before he came in with the Wild, I kind of knew who he was, but I remember seeing like a compilation on YouTube of his crazy things he would talk about with the press.
How big it is.
Yeah. It's so big.
Yeah. Like, why you have to be mad? It's only game. I think that was his too.
Yeah.
But like, so that year I missed a lot of that because that was the year that I tore my quad tendon. So I was out the whole year that year.
Mm-hmm.
I had two surgeries and whatnot. So, and that was the year that we beat Colorado in seven.
Yeah.
Needles goal.
Yep.
And then got absolutely smoked by Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
That was the year they won the cup. But, regardless, like, I missed a lot of that because I wasn't around the guys as much, but from what I did see of Briz, like, he was unbelievable. One of the nicest guys ever. He just wanted to talk. Like, you had to be careful. Like, if you had something to do after practice, you had to avoid Briz just because he was going to talk
to
you for 45 minutes about something. And it could be about your family and kids, but like, he was just going to keep talking.
Yeah.
And like, he was a super good guy.
And one of the best bits I saw from him, though, in one of the clips when he played with Jaromir Jagr, I forgot where he played with him. I don't know if it was Edmonton, wherever. And it was like they were filming him during one of the pregame dinners or pregame lunches. And Jagr, I guess he liked to sit by himself. He liked to eat by himself. And Briz, like, and everybody would say, like, don't go sit by him. He's gonna move. And Briz just kept going and sitting by him. Jagr would move to another table and Briz would follow him and sit right next to him. He's like, what are you doing, man? Like, it was so funny. He kept following him around when Jagr just wanted to eat by himself. It was hilarious. Yeah,
there's certain guys like that are just kind of funny guys and just want to be like the prankster. Like, every team typically has one.
Mm-hmm.
A funny story about that, actually, going back years, actually, this was my, maybe when I signed out of college, like, I came up and I played six games after the year. And Nicholas Backstrom is known to be, no, this was actually my rookie year. It was with Mike Rupp. So Nick Backstrom was known to be like one of the most superstitious, like, he wouldn't talk on game days. Literally, you could go, Nicky, what's up, man? And he'll stare at you. He'll like nod his head. Like,
yeah,
that's it. He wouldn't talk on game days. I don't know what he was like with his wife and kids at home. Yeah. But like, at the rink, not a word.
Hopefully not like that at home.
Yeah. And yeah. then yeah. and then he would go to, at the time, we ate pregame meal at this Italian spot in St. Paul. I can't remember the name.
Cassettas?
No, it was like...
Oh. It's right down, it's down West 7th, a little further, right?
It wasn't on 7th either. It was kind of in the middle of the city. It was really... Okay. It's not there anymore.
Okay.
I can't remember the name of it though. Regardless, mm-hmm. the guys used to go there every, that's pregame meal. And then it moved up to a place on Grand actually, or somewhere around there, but regardless.
Mm-hmm.
So one day Mike Rupp goes to Nick Backstrom, hey, can I get a ride to meal? Rupp had just like signed or gotten traded or whatever it was. And he didn't know that Backy was like the way mm-hmm. that he was. So he's like, hey, Backy, like, do you mind if I hop in with you? And he gave him like a nod because he was like, you know, he didn't want to be rude to the new guy.
Yep. Yeah.
And Rupper mm-hmm. is like the nicest, like he's like the happy-go-lucky talking guy. So he like went, you know, shower, cold tub, hot tub, cold tub, you know, talking to people. And it was like 30 minutes later and he's like, where is Backy at? Like, where is this guy? So somebody's like, oh, he left a while ago. And he's like... shit, okay, whatever. So he like runs out to the garage thinking like he's just gonna jump in with somebody else, and Backy's sitting in the car waiting for him.
He sat there the entire time
wow. in the car. But Backy's schedule was like to the minute.
Mm-hmm.
So like yeah. I'm shocked he waited. But Rupper tells the story about how like then he gets in the car and he's like, so how's St. Paul? And then he had no idea the guy didn't talk on game days.
Yeah.
So he's sitting there and he's like, he's thinking like, He tells the story that he gets out of the car and he's like, man, I talk too much. Like, he's like, I just need to let him talk sometimes, you know? Mm-hmm. So he gets in pregame meal and he starts asking Backy questions. And that's when the guys like picked up what was going on. And so they kept telling him like, hey, you should ask him about this story. So oh. Rupper would like ask about a story and Backy would just stare at him. And he's like, oh, he must not like that story. He's like, give me another one. So the guys were like feeding him all these stories about Nick Backstrom
yeah.
and like trying to see if Backy would, because Backy normal days, like, funny guy
yeah.
like would chime in on everything yep. just not game days.
Yep.
So they're feeding Rupper all these stories saying, hey, you need to have him tell you this one and this one and this one, and Backy would just stare at him. He was sitting there eating his meal, and I thought it was hilarious that Backy would go to pregame meal with the whole team and not say a word,
just knowing that he wasn't going to say anything.
He wasn't going to say a word. He would just go, and there was probably 10-15 guys, not everyone went, but he would just sit there and eat his food. Then he'd get up and he'd leave.
Wow,
that's the most bizarre thing
yeah.
in the world. Did you have any? Yeah. Do you still have any superstitions on game days?
Mine has turned a lot more. I used to be really bad. Like I used to have a ton. It was like to the minute. I was kind of one of those guys.
Yeah.
But I've really, really turned around. Like when I first met Carly, like she used to get so mad about it. But like I used to tell her, like, hey, like this is just, you know, this has been my life, right? Like I never, you know, focused on women or kids or any of that. But then I realized quickly, like with Carly and Sophia, it was like I had to focus on them too. Like that was a huge aspect of it. And that was honestly what made my game become so much better. Like that was a huge transition for me to make me a lot better of a hockey player.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it made me go home and like I'd play with Sophia. I'd hang out with Carly and like not think about hockey 24/7, 365. Yeah. Like I had a life outside of it because of them. And I think that made my game so much better. So to the like now I still have my routine. But, you know, when I was playing here, like I would, you know, I would go play with the kids outside. I would, you know, I think there were times that I would drop Hendrix off or Sophie off at a friend's house on my way to a game. Like I would do that stuff and it wasn't as much of an issue as it was my first few years where I would never even would have considered it.
Yeah.
So that's helped a lot.
I feel like that's probably the best way is to distract yourself. Like I know probably totally different as a player, but even as a fan, like the day of a playoff game, I just want to puke the entire day. I'm like so nervous for what.
It's worse as fans. Like yeah. I'll say the first two games of the playoffs this year, I wasn't playing. I was way more nervous when I was playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's way worse when you're a fan. You have no control.
Right.
Right. When you're playing, you're like, hey, I can actually positively or negatively affect this game. So I need to be locked in and dialed in, but it like, it's a different mentality than being completely helpless, just watching.
Especially if you have to like work all day in an office and that's just all that's on your mind. And like you're trying to like work, but you just can't focus because you're like, I have no idea what's going to happen tonight.
Yeah.
It's going to dictate my happiness probably for the entire summer.
Yeah, 100%. Like it's another level for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we only have a few more questions. But one of them, I guess, We were talking before the show about jerseys, but are you excited that the reverse retros are coming back? What does Pittsburgh's look like?
I was a fan. So the reverse retros were, we had the white with like the Pittsburgh sideways.
Yeah.
And those were sweet. Like last year we did the black ones, which is like the actual retro. So, I mean, I think they're awesome. It's good of the league to do that. It's good for our revenue, but it's also good for the fans to kind of get some new jerseys. It can be boring to have the same ones year after year.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a huge fan of like teams changing up like their logos and stuff like that personally, but if you're going to do the reverse retro side of it, I think it's pretty cool. I mean, it's a great way to do it. We love wearing them personally. I think it's a great touch for sure.
Yeah. What about a hockey color rush? Would we ever see that?
No chance. We've got a long time. Like I saw somebody said that the NBA was bringing back like the nickname jerseys this year.
Yeah.
You remember those ones where like, I think guys got to pick their nicknames. You know, it would say King James on the back.
Mm-hmm. Or whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
I think Kobe's was Mamba. You know, and so that's pretty cool and something I don't think the NHL would ever do.
Right.
Like there's no chance.
Well, in the NBA, people are more, there's more like just personality and flair and the players do all the drama. Whereas it seems like hockey players are just more disciplined and it's more of just.
Yeah. It's, you know, there's a good and bad side of that, right? Like the dress code side of things is changing, you know, towards more casual, certain like Arizona did 100% casual last year. This year, Crosby is very much, you know, pretty old school with that stuff. So we wore suits, which I'm personally a fan of.
Mm-hmm.
The hard part with it is like you have some guys that would pull up in like gym shorts and like flip flops. Then you have some guys that would wear nice jeans and a nicer outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Then some guys would be in a suit. So like it looks very like discombobulated it that way. Whereas the NBA, like it's been like that for so long now that everybody's kind of on the same page where nobody comes in and sweats.
Right.
If they do, it's like the team issued sweats.
Yeah.
Where at least it still looks okay. You know, I know the Wild switched like team sweats on flights.
Uh-huh.
And that looks good as long as everyone's wearing the same thing.
Right. Everyone has to be matching.
But again, like I know certain guys on my team right now that if we said there was no dress code, it would be an absolute shit show.
Right.
Like they would come in Crocs. It would be.
Well, and that reminds me of like the NBA bubble. I remember Kawhi Leonard was like walking into his game and he was wearing like flip flops and sweats and a sweatshirt. And it said, when you're on your way to financial aid, like in college, and he just literally looked like a college student walking in the union to go talk about why some charge was added to his bill.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like, but for them, that's become so much more normal, right?
Right.
It's the fashion side. But
yeah,
I'll say this, like, that adds such a different element to the player's like status, not status, but like just the image of individual players and their own, you know, persona, their own brand, I'll say, right? Like it adds so much to that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the NHL is definitely far behind on compared to the NBA. The other side of it, you know, the NFL is even behind the NBA. In that, like the NBA is the front runner by a mile, and then it's the NFL, MLB, and NHL are kind of on the same playing field. Like, you never see what MLB players are wearing.
No,
WNBA is actually really good at it too.
Okay,
if you follow the WNBA on social media, like they post what the women are wearing, and you know, like it's pretty cool that they go to that aspect of it because again, it's for their own personal brands,
right? Well, almost like Joey B. Like what he would wear.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like that
exactly.
Adds to his personality.
Recently, Aaron Rodgers looking like Nick Cage from Con Air walking up to training camp. And then you look over at Kirk Cousins just showing up in just some normal gym shorts, a t-shirt, walking in with a hat, you know. Just
to see you guys again.
And then like Russell Wilson, right? Wearing his own jersey. Like,
yeah.
What the hell is that
Getting out of like a tank or something. Yeah. Drove up in like a Hummer.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Starwood Motors made that for him. But like it's crazy. Like it's absolutely crazy how some take it to a whole nother level and then some are so casual and, you know, against it. So it's slowly changing in the NHL, but it'll take 30 years to get to where the NBA is today.
So,
it's that long.
So you're pulling up to camp here soon. What are you wearing?
I would wear kind of what I'm wearing, t-shirt and shorts. I'll keep it simple.
Right?
Yeah. But I mean, for me, like, for us, our thing is like, make sure you always look presentable.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like that's
you don't want to look ridiculous.
Yeah. And like, even like Aaron training Rogers. Camp, we have zero, you know, restrictions or rules on attire. We'll have guys that are in flip-flops and, you know, and all that. And that's fine for training camp. Like, we're not, no one sees you walking into the rink for training camp. Like, it's the NFL. That's like a thing that they do every year. For hockey, it's not. Like, you've got 60 some odd guys, 70 guys, whatever it is, like walking in a back door.
Yeah.
You know, from a private parking lot.
You, like, just leave your car and you go in.
Exactly. Like, and ours is like 15 feet.
Right? Yeah.
You know, like, you're just, and then you're inside. So for us, all of our, for the NHL, or I mean, at least for the Penguins, I'll say, like, all of our stuff, like, they'll get pictures of us walking onto the plane before trips in our suits, but we're wearing a suit still.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You know, we wear suits on flights. So, like, you're catching that sometimes before games, but again, you're in a suit.
Right.
So I kind of take it to where with some of my suits, I'll wear some crazier stuff suit-wise, but still, it's a suit, right?
You're not like Jalen Ramsey getting out of, like, a money truck. Remember, was that last year?
Oh, yeah.
A couple years ago. Truck,
like, it's crazy.
Bro.
I feel like if there's one player in the NHL who might pull something like that, it could be like Trevor Zegras, maybe. Just because his...
I could see PK Subban doing it.
Yeah.
He's flashy.
Subban, yep.
PK's flashy.
Even Evander. Yeah, he's got that personality going for him, I guess. Well, I see. But speaking of, like, watching guys, like, come in, like, they show them showing up to game day wearing what they, you know, their attire. I see a few guys coming in with coffee. Are you, like,
I'm a coffee guy.
You're a coffee guy before games?
I'm a coffee guy, yeah. Americano.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, personally, like, I feel like that would, like, jack me up too much before the game, and then I would, like, crash.
Well,
but,
so a lot of people talk about this, and here's the thing. Like, for us, you're drinking that coffee at 4 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game.
Right.
So you've already had your up, you're down, and then you're trying to find another up before the game.
Which is hopefully some adrenaline.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, like, it really serves no purpose. Like, for me, it's because I love afternoon coffees. Like, every day I have an afternoon coffee. Every single day.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the time, like, I'm a short nap guy. Like, I love a 15, 20 minute nap. Mm-hmm. Carly thinks I'm absolutely insane.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I'll close my eyes like 10 minutes. And wake up and be like, all right, I'm ready to go. And
it works,
like,
wonders.
That is the most refreshing feeling, though, because when you sleep longer. See, like, I've always wished that America would adopt what they do in Spain every day. They have, like, the hour break where you go home during a work day and everyone naps. It's like a normal thing that they do. Because I do it, like, ever since I started working from home, I'll do it sometimes. Just pop a quick 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And and the rest of the day, I'm great.
Yeah.
Right. You don't need 3 hours.
No.
Like, 20 minutes and you're good.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There have been times I'll get, you know, somewhere to pick up the kids and be 10 minutes early, and I'll take a 10 minute nap in the car.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
It's awesome.
That's perfect. A big dad move too.
Oh yeah. So 100%. Like, it's, you know, it's like, I love the 10-15. Like, the most I'll do is like 30-35.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's if I'm, like, really tired, but then you're pushing it. Like, at that point, there's times that I don't want to get up.
Right. You hit the point of no return, which I think is about 45 minutes to an hour, depending on how much sleep you got the night before. But if you go longer than, like, an hour taking a nap, you do not want to get up the rest of the day.
I think scientifically they've said the threshold is 30 minutes. If you go beyond 30 minutes, you're going to wake up groggy.
That's like, my pregame nap is about hour 45. So on game days, I do that.
You do it. Wait, you sleep an hour and 45 minutes before the game?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. And that's probably on par with a lot of guys.
Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, like, my pregame naps are the only ones that I'll ever nap like that.
Wow.
And so that's every game day. But that's kind of become the routine. It's really bizarre because if I know I have a game that day, I can fall asleep hour 45, crash the whole time, get up, and I'm ready to go. Whereas, like, the next day is a practice day. I'll go try to do the exact same thing. I'll sleep 20 minutes and I'm up.
So you're not, so a game day, you're not, like, anxious. You're not struggling to fall asleep. You just, you're out.
I'm out. Yeah.
I didn't know that about any hockey players. That's nuts.
I bet you 98% of hockey players nap at least an hour and a half on game days.
And that's, like, before you get to the arena?
Yeah. Or, so it'd be, like, after pregame meal. Okay. So you'd basically, the schedule would essentially be like 9 o'clock. You're at the rink. You're skating at 10:30. If you're the away team, 11:30. So as for, like, my home game schedule would be this. You're at the rink by 9. 10:30, you're on the ice. You're off by 10:45. You're home by... So I'll shower. I'll do a cold tub then. I'll grab my meal and I bring it home. So I'm eating my meal at home by, like, 12 o'clock. I'll hang out till probably 1 with the kids, you know, whatever. I'll sleep from 1 to call it 2:45. Sometimes 1:15 to 3, whatever. And then I'm up. I'll have my coffee at home. I'll hang out with the kids for, you know, 30, 45 minutes. And I leave around 3:45 for the game.
Wow. Okay.
That's insane.
That does that afternoon coffee makes sense now. We went full circle there because you're waking up from that. But I suppose you're like preparing all the energy you have for the game.
Right.
Like you're and making sure you got to be rested.
Right. The other side of it, and you know, we're not going to get too technical here, but like we have so many nights of such little sleep because of after games. Like after a game, I'm up till 2-3 in the morning.
I know.
Yeah.
Like you're running on that adrenaline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some guys, like I know Sid is the craziest sleeper I've ever seen in my life. Crosby. After like game 7 last year, he fell asleep on the bus to the airport.
Really?
Like this guy, but every game.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what it is. He's just, he's so calm all the time.
He's just out right he's after. Out.
He can sleep on like, on cue, whenever he wants.
I need that.
It's crazy.
I always try to sleep on planes. I can't do it.
No,
like,
me neither.
I could have played Arizona in front of like 300 fans, and I'm up till 3 in the morning.
Yeah.
I feel like I can't sleep just, you know, before like a crazy work day, you know, but then you're playing in a game 7 of a playoff series with huge implications in front of thousands of fans, and you're telling me Sidney Crosby is just like, oh, I'm going to take a quick nap.
Yeah, but he's like, I've never seen him get amped up. Like, he doesn't ever get amped
up.
He's
just a calm guy.
He's just always calm.
Yeah. He's just crazy. He's just, then that's why he's so good.
Like,
he plays the game calm.
Yeah.
You know, in his head, like, it could be chaos around him, but for him, it's moving in slow motion.
Not overthinking it.
So is it true that there are guys who, like, after a game will still exercise? I've heard stories of people who, like, ride the bike after a game.
Yeah, we do every game.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we work out after every game. You know, unless you have a back to back, we do our lifts after games.
Really?
Yeah. That's very normal. And the reason why is because you don't want to do it like on a practice day where you have a game the next day to where if you're sore at all,
okay. Mm-hmm.
You know, so you typically, you know, and that's when you're trying to get the recovery back in. So you typically play your game, you'll do your lift or your bike ride, whatever, right after, and then your recovery starts right away. So you've got 48 hours till your next game day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, at the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
So that's plenty of time to recover and kind of get back into it.
Okay.
Damn.
Whereas if you have a back-to-back, you're not, right?
Right.
Some guys,
that does make sense, though.
Yeah, yeah, I'll still ride the bike as like a recovery ride, and then I'll cold tub after for a back-to-back. But that's like a recovery ride. You're cycling. Like you're not riding the bike.
Right. You're not on a Peloton bike. Yeah,
exactly.
All right. We're going uphill. Right, we're going down a canyon now.
Yeah. And then, you know, for us, like there's nights that you end up playing 12 minutes, you know, or 15 minutes in a game rather than 16 to 18. You know, 16 to 18 is probably my normal. So if I play 12, 13, 14 minutes, like after the game, I'm like, man, I feel like I didn't even play.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So then you do a bike ride, and it, you know, keeps your conditioning up. It's good for you.
So would you consider yourself a smelling salt guy?
Absolutely not.
No.
No.
Really? Okay.
I hate them.
You hate them?
Yeah. I don't know why. I can't do it.
Damn.
I'm not a fan.
We have 3 bottles right there.
Those are smelling salts?
We do them during the podcast sometimes.
Yeah. I'm personally not a fan. They don't really do it for me. Like, for me, it's kind of like, what was that? And then, like, I don't know. Like,
it doesn't really give you, like, I think scientifically wise, like, they don't even give you, like, a sustained jolt, like, for, like, minutes. It's, like, maybe just a second, and then it's gone.
Yeah, it's basically, like, a what the hell just happened, right? That's all it is.
It's not, pretty much what it is.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything for you.
That's probably why people like us love them.
Yeah.
Because it's just...
We have guys that do them, you know, TV timeouts, like, you know, before periods, TV timeout, whatever. Like, you know, we have quite a few that do... Maybe not TV timeout. Like Darcy Kemper was a guy that every single TV timeout, he would have a smelling salt.
Coming
back to the bench. He was one of those guys. I've just never been a fan. I've never liked him.
Yeah.
I think it's hilarious when our trainers will like throw him over the glass. People don't realize what it is. And they'll be like, and they like lose their minds. Have you ever seen those fans do that sometimes?
Oh, they give them the fans?
Oh, yeah.
That's
hilarious.
You can find some videos on YouTube that are comical.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
Because these fans will pick them up and like, what is this? And they'll tell them like to smell it like through the glass, and they'll do it and like lose their mind.
I remember someone, so Jake got to go on the ice at a Wild game, and it's right on the Zamboni because we had a connection that let us do that. And he gave you a smelling salt.
Yeah, he was kind of following behind me. He's like, hey, man. Smelling salt, I just want to see a video of it. Because he knew who we were. And he's like, I just want to see a video on socials of you doing it. He just handed me a smelling salt. I'm like, I mean, I can't complain. So,
Middle of the game, we're in the concourse.
And I guess they just have a basket that they can just grab
as many as they want.
Because they're on the bench.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So our trainers have buckets on them. Like, it's just.
Yeah. Well, and like football guys, like put them in front of their eyes and shit.
Patrick Kane does that.
Yeah, he does that. Yeah.
I don't. There's no way that does anything.
No.
No. Except for damage to like your retinas, probably.
Yeah. I mean, you're the amount of brain cells that you're killing every moment that you're doing that.
I know.
Is astronomical.
We've probably killed so many. Yeah. I mean, it's not like we haven't done them like we're not doing them like every day, every hour or anything, but like during podcasts, we've done them a couple times. And
Carly did it, I think, a couple of weeks ago, maybe a month ago or whatever, before the initials game on Power Trip. Like they had them and she did it. And she's like, she thought she was high, like on multiple drugs.
Yeah.
She said, she's like, I couldn't think. She's like, she felt crazy from it, I guess.
Yeah.
I was like,
we had meat sauce here a couple months ago and he's like not fazed by him at all. Like we gave him the bottle and he was like, I just didn't even react. He's like, I used to do these all the time.
He has nothing up there.
That's probably why. Yeah, you should have said that.
It's just mush.
Yeah. Yeah,
no brain cells to kill.
Yeah, that's it. That's all he's got.
And then and then Billy G was like, really loved it. He's like, fuck yeah, let's do it. He was a big smelling salts guy.
You try to tell him, we're like, yeah, these things give you energy. He's like, no, they fucking don't.
No, they don't.
No. I was like, I don't know. I feel pretty good after doing it. He's like, yeah, for like what, 3 seconds?
Yeah. Billy G knows. Like he played in the old days when guys were eating them.
You exactly. Know? Putting them like they're probably tucking them in their lip like it's a chew. Right.
Oh. Right.
Like that's when Billy G played. So like it's a different level. But they do nothing.
No.
They do nothing.
Do you play with guys who don't wear socks in their skates?
Ooh. Yeah.
Are you one of those guys?
No. Oh, okay. I'm a sock guy. Brian Boyle did no socks. Ricard Raquel does. He cuts off like he literally cuts his socks like in the middle of his foot. You know, so like his toes are exposed, but his heel has the sock on it.
Okay.
Does that make
sense? That would be so uncomfortable.
He wants his toes to breathe.
Well, what's weird about it is like in my mind, I'm like, Ricky, like how does your sock not roll up the second you put your skate on, right? Like it just rolls up your foot. Like now you've got like can't be comfortable. But that's what he does.
There's some crazy stuff like that we've heard just that players
hockey
do.
Players are nuts. Yeah. Like that's what it comes down to. Yeah. Like it's pure insanity. None of it actually helps. None of it matters.
No.
It's just go out there and play the game.
Like, superstition.
And the amount of things that I switch and do and try, it's all idiotic. Like everybody does it. If one hockey player in the world tells you that he does absolutely nothing, he's lying.
Yeah. Like, I'm just a standard tape job guy.
I saw the
everyone is till you haven't scored in 10 games.
Yeah, right.
I saw a picture of Ryan O'Reilly's stick the other day, and I was blown away by it. How he's used to playing everything off the heel, and the toe just curves to push the puck back to the heel. It was like the weirdest stick I've ever seen.
So the problem with the straight curve, Crosby has it too, is because you don't have a toe. If you were to like, if I'm a lefty and I go to turn right,
yeah.
The puck wants to slip off your toe.
Right. It doesn't like retain.
Yeah. Whereas like I have a toe curve where it'll hold it kind of in that like pocket, we call it.
Yeah.
And so Ryan O'Reilly is a really straight curve. Crosby's the same way. Patrick Kane's the same way. So for O'Reilly, that was his way of having a toe where when he turns right, it'll kind of hold it in that so-called pocket there.
Right.
But it serves no purpose for him.
Right.
You know, he's a heel player. Patrick Kane's a heel player. Crosby's a heel player. Like those guys shoot the puck. Everything they do is basically off the heel. It's a completely different way of playing, but they've done that their entire lives.
Right.
That's why their puck skills are so good. They've used that same stick their entire lives. You know, like it's just kind of a lot of guys switch things up and try new things. Like those guys have never once done it and they got so used to it and that's what they like.
That's nuts.
And it's like Kaprizov, like, well, who's telling us he like, cuts his the tongue off. I don't think he has like tongues on his skates.
Yeah, they're pretty short, but he's a guy that doesn't like the tongue underneath his shin pads, but he also doesn't like tongues out because it kind of restricts you from leaning forward because it hits it. So he just cuts it.
Yeah.
You know, he also cuts the cuffs off of his gloves, you know, so like most people where it says Bauer, like on the cuff, there's still another piece on top of that. He cuts that piece off.
Jeez.
You know, like some guys are really finicky that way. Whereas like Crosby, like, the palms of his gloves are like an inch thick. Like he's really likes a thick palm of his gloves, whereas mine need to be like paper thin.
You almost feel the stick.
I want to feel the stick. Whereas he's like, I guess the story he tells is that when he was a kid, his parents used to sew leather on his gloves because they didn't want to have to buy him new pairs.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So he used to have a thick leather pad like of it for the palm of his gloves. So that's what he got used to.
Yeah.
So now that's what he has to stick with.
Yeah. It seems like all those traditions always stem from like what people have done as kids, because I know there's another player in the league who uses like three pieces of tape or like one piece of tape just across his stick, because growing up, he just didn't have money. His parents didn't have money for tape. Like,
so he made it work with just the bare minimum amount of tape.
I can't remember who is Jenner who told us all this stuff, but I can't remember who that was. But it's
Fiala
like,
used to do that.
Fiala. Does he not do that anymore?
No, he tapes his full stick, but he cuts the bottom of it off.
Oh, okay.
So like he likes the feel of the blade sliding on the ice like that. So he cuts the bottom of his off, but it's a full tape job.
Jeez. No.
Yeah, like Pastrnak has a crazy one. Like the guys are, you know, they do crazy things, and some people, you know, realistically, you should just tape it normal. Right? Mm-hmm. That's what's going to be best for the overall game. But like, it works for Pastrnak just fine.
So Jake, you need to come up with some weird shit for Beer League. You need to have some weird tradition you do, the way you dress, or
I
don't know how much room you have as a goalie there.
Maybe only strap one strap of my goalie pads and leave them all unstrapped and see how that works for myself.
Yeah.
Or barely tie my skates.
Go two gloves.
Ooh, go two gloves.
No stick.
And no stick?
The stick seems like it's kind of a pain in the ass anyways.
It kind of is. It kind of gets in the way.
You can catch on both sides.
And like when I want to pass the puck, I'm not on my, you know, your lefty essentially.
Clench a fist and punch it or kick it.
Or two blockers and two sticks.
Two blockers.
Nah, dude, that'd be weird. But no, try something like that. Or maybe go no chest protector. No helmet.
See, that seems like a terrible idea.
No, I know.
Yeah.
Get like the old Jason mask.
The episode of Trailer Park Boys where he's got the milk carton as a face mask.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a multitude of options, but I kind of like the double glove.
Yeah. Have you actually seen that?
No, never.
Okay, I'd be the first. Right now.
This would be a first.
Show up to just the game. Just go out on the ice wearing two gloves.
Go just when you need to like pass a puck, just kick it. Like just go old soccer goalie. Like throw it in the air, kick it.
Like I said, like you see the soccer goalies wearing the huge fucking gloves. Like that would be the modern day hockey goalie.
We gotta test this on the ODR this winter. We gotta try that out.
I'll have to buy another glove, but I think that would be electric.
Some people call it stupid. We call it innovation.
I think maybe like we're joking about it, but in 10 years you will start seeing goalies actually performing this method of net minding, I should say, in the NHL. You never know.
Yeah,
it's always evolving.
You guys are gonna cause some chaos here. But
I kind of
like it.
Yeah,
Part of the internet will actually drive them crazy.
Well, you shouldn't trust anything that anyone tells you on the internet ever anyways.
No, I thought
everything you read on the internet's true.
Yeah.
I read that
on the internet.
It depends on your perspective, yeah.
It may or not be true, but I think it is true because the internet told me so.
Right.
Yeah, I read it there, so it means it's got to be
true. Yeah, right?
Right, exactly, especially if you hear it from us. Well, Jake, did you have any other questions?
No, I think I'm good.
All right, well, Jason, we got to move into the rapid fire. You did this last year when you were on, but we have 10 new questions for you.
Okay.
So, Deserted Island, you could only choose one movie to watch for the rest of your time there. What is it?
Step Brothers.
Good choice. Name a first world problem bugging you at the moment.
Oh, man. My babysitter.
Okay. Let's see. If you had a walkout song, which I think should be in every sport at this point, what would it be?
Man, that's tough, too. I know this is rapid fire.
That's all right.
I'm not very good at
this. This is an important one, though.
I don't know.
Joker and the Thief? Wolfmaker?
No, I was trying to think of like, I'm a Zach Brown guy. Like, I love Zach Brown Band. So
Chicken Fried?
Yeah, Chicken Fried would be a good one. Or Homegrown. Homegrown's a good one.
Yeah. Okay.
Love it.
No, that would definitely change it up. Mayo or Miracle Whip? Which word do you use?
Or no, that's dressings on sandwiches.
Oh, okay.
They're not the same thing. But do you like mayo or Miracle Whip? You prefer one over the other?
I say mayo, but I hate both.
Okay. But if you had to choose.
I hate mayo too. That's why I didn't even understand that question. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, they're technically different. Maybe somewhere else, like down south, they're the same or something. But I mean, Midwest, they're different.
They're different?
Different flavors.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of Miracle Whip. I like mayo more, but.
Yeah, I'm not a mayonnaise guy on anything. I don't really like it personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What is your least favorite sport?
Baseball.
Craziest thing on your bucket list?
Uh,
Or what's the craziest thing you'd consider doing, maybe?
I'm not really like a crazy adventurous guy. Like, I don't want to skydive. Like, I don't want to do any of that.
You don't want to join the cast of Jackass?
No.
No.
Like, I used to when I was a kid. I wanted to. My brothers and I used to do that all the time. Like, pretend we were jackasses. I'm trying to think. I don't even know. Like, for me, dirt biking is like, I love riding dirt bikes. So maybe something with that.
All right. Maybe hit a huge jump.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah. That'd be sick. You can do
foam pit. Backflip into a foam pit.
There you go. There you go. Is a hot dog considered a sandwich?
No.
Electrically fast answer on that one. What is your favorite fast food place?
After a few drinks, aka a lot of drinks, Taco Bell.
Yep.
But day to day, I'm going to have to say McDonald's.
Okay.
It's consistent.
Have you seen that new Taco Bell in Brooklyn Park?
No.
I got to get there.
It's like a bank.
It's like a bank.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So you drive up and you tell the window like what you want, and you like put your credit card in the thing and it sucks it up through a tube. They must have built that where a bank actually was before, I'm guessing.
I don't know.
And then it comes down in like one of those tubes with your food. It's a whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided to build it here.
In Brooklyn Park.
Cool. Yeah.
Another dub for Minnesota mm-hmm. on yeah. that one.
Nice.
That might be the bucket list item, is go there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There we go. Who's one person you'd want to hang out with, dead or alive?
Muhammad Ali.
I like it. Final one, the best one of all, is give us your strike three call. So if you were an ump right now, umping a game, strike three, how are you saying it?
I kind of like the old, like, Steve Reich. Like how
Steve
they,
Reich?
You know what I mean? How they like...
The old school.
The old school. Yeah, that'd kind of be the old school. I like that.
Sweet.
Strike.
Strike.
Yeah.
It's almost like... It's like a three-syllable word. Mm.
Yeah.
Instead of like we've had others come in and we've asked them, do you have their strike three call? And they're like, I prefer the way where it just sounds like a bunch of jargon and you don't know what it means. Like when they're like,
Yeah, you know, sometimes like they
blurt anything out. They even say strike three.
It's like, what?
Yeah. What does that mean?
That's not even I didn't even know it was a thing.
Oh,
is that like the new way of
doing there are umps who just blur out random shit.
At least really? maybe to themselves are saying strike three, but like I'll hear it on, you'll hear it like at on TV. I'll hear like, strange.
We need a hockey ref who like does the symbol for a penalty, but they just blurt out some random shit.
Wes McCauley is your best chance.
Yes. I was going to say, he might be the guy.
Yeah, Wes is the guy.
Yeah. We need to talk to him.
Yeah. Well, Jason, we want to thank you so much for coming on, man. It was a blast having you here. And definitely, folks, if you want to sign up for the golf tournament, I think we're over halfway full now.
It's still
3 weeks out, so we're filling it up quick.
I love it. Let's get it full. And again, thank you guys so much for doing that. It's going to go to some great programming for us at the hospital, and the kids are benefiting in a huge way from it. So we really appreciate all support. And come hang out with us. I'll be there. Carly will be there, and we'll have some fun.
Yep. Yeah. And Jason will be carrying us to 39th place with a celebrity putt.
Yes.
Or 35th.
35th. Yeah.
Yeah. We're going to move one spot up. It's going to happen this year.
And then in 30 years, we should be in first.
Top five at least.
Yeah.
We'll get there.
It's a good goal.
Yeah. Deal.
Yeah. Well, come hang out with us, guys. 10ktakesmn.com. There's a link at the top for 10K Invitational. And actually on that page as well, you can donate directly to the Invitational, which will all go back to Give 16. So hope you guys join us there. And we'll take a quick break here. We'll be right back.
Do you want to bet on sports in Minnesota or anywhere else where you are sick and tired of potentially dealing with casinos, maybe even taking more money than you think they should be taking? Well, we have the application for you. I want to talk to you about Better Edge. It's a legal online social betting marketplace that allows you to post and engage with other sports betting fans, place no commission positions in an online marketplace. You can compete in direct-to-head challenges with your friends or with horrible bettors such as myself, sometimes Boss Man. And then compete in public or private betting competitions. You can set that up, or you can compete in other betting competitions that have been set up in the app for more money or even some prizes like travel or getaways or stuff like that. And you can also buy or sell positions such as spread, over, under, money line at current market prices. Now you set we set the market. The people in the app set the market. It's not the casinos.
It's a collective effort.
It's a collective effort.
Not a dictatorship.
Exactly. It's a free market, essentially a free market betting app. We set the market and you bet against other people, but it works almost similar to
betting app that you might use in Vegas. Right. It's like a sports book app, and listen, but it's legal.
If you're out there using the offshore books like Bovada, BetUS, or even MyBookie, I don't know the law, but the cops may show up to your house and tase you.
Exactly. Because
that's against the law. But Better Edge is not against the law.
Exactly. Instead of getting tased, you can legally win money on this app. And it works, like I said, just like any other sports betting app, application, or a thing you've used before, or any sports book, except you're just betting against other people and you're setting the market. If you want to change the spread in a game because you think it's bullshit, you can create an order in the app, or even look at other market orders that other people have maybe that they want to challenge on, and you can change the spread based on different from what the sports books have it set at, or the odds makers, I should say. But you can go on. We recommend that you download this app, and you want to use promo code 10K, so 10K at betteredge.com to get a free $20 when you sign up, and of course verify your ID. So once again, use promo code 10K, 10K at betteredge.com to get a free $20. It's your money. Use it when you need it.
That was an electric ad read.
Yeah, it
could be the tagline.
J.G. Wentworth, I think, was...
J.G. Wentworth, 877-CASH-NOW.
It's your money. Use it when you need it. You can get that money also from Better Edge.
You have, like, the angry old woman out, like, shaking her fist out the window. Mm-hmm. It's my money, and I need it now! It's like, Beth, shut the fuck up. It's 6 in the morning.
What the fuck are you talking
sleep.
About? Fucking crackhead.
those commercials are always outrageous. But, God, that was just a blast of an interview with Jason. Mm-hmm. Seriously, I think, honestly, we could have done that for 4 more hours.
We could have kept going.
We could have Rogan'd it.
Yeah, we literally could have had a, 3, 4, 5 hour podcast with him, and we'll definitely have him on again. He's going to be involved in, of course, more events like the 10K Invitational, but he's a family guy. He's got a, wife and kids at home, and we didn't want to take up all of his time, but right. It was still an electric interview.
Yeah, it was so much fun. So once again, folks, sign up for that golf tournament while spots are available. It's filling up really fast, and so are the sponsorship spots. We're running out of sponsorships, which, damn, that's a good problem to have. Mm-hmm. So sign up on our website. 10ktakesmn.com. But final segment, canceled. It's 2022. Everything and everyone is getting canceled for one reason or another. And now we're going to do it because we're pissed off at the world and we have problems. And no one knows how to deal with our problems.
Yeah.
What is it in the Family episode? These problems matter. It's like nothing will matter as much as us skipping rocks on this lake right now. Oh, yeah. I got so many problems, man.
Yeah. like the inspirational, motivational shit.
No, we're just going to bitch for a couple minutes
that's
here.
That's what we do.
All right, what do you want to cancel today?
So I'm just going to straight up cancel. So those in the corporate world or anybody who uses Teams and you set up meetings and Teams know that I'm not saying when you maybe host the meeting or you set up the meeting, but someone else does and you probably have to be there. You can see that notification when someone starts the meeting. There's the big, beautiful button that says join, because we all love meetings, and that button is just the most satisfying button to see, because you always want to join meetings. Of course, I may or may not be sarcastic when I say that. I'm being sarcastic. But anyway, it drives me nuts. I'm canceling those people 30 seconds into the meeting if you have not joined yet, because obviously if you need to be there, you should be at the meeting. But there's been a couple occasions where I haven't joined a meeting in maybe until 30 seconds after it started because I'm finishing something else up. I'm literally just about to join and they start calling me. They start calling you from the meeting. Blah, blah, blah is calling you to join this meeting. I'm like, I fucking know. I'm joining it right now. Give me one fucking second. Like I know it's on my calendar. I'm joining it. Give me 2 fucking seconds. It drives me nuts. It's one thing where if you're supposed to join a meeting that you're supposed to be at and it's been 5 minutes and you're not, you just forget about it. And they're like, oh, we should call them. Like, I'm never that person to be like, oh, they haven't shown up in a minute. Or it's been 30 to 45 seconds since I started this meeting. I know he's invited. I'm going to call him to join the meeting. Mm-hmm. Literally, I'm going to decline the meeting, break my computer, and literally never join a meeting ever again with this corporation.
Yeah.
So that shit, I'm canceling those people that will literally call you within 30 seconds of you not joining a said meeting that has started where I know I need to join, but give me like 2 seconds.
See, like for those of you who are blue collar workers, I know us in corporate America, these problems are very minimal compared to your problems, but we still hate them. We still, the only difference is the shit that we deal with is really petty and it's almost worse than just a full blown shitstorm.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least in a full blown shitstorm, there's like actual there's an actual reason to get mad at someone. There's actual reason for there to be drama. When it's for something as minimal as stuff like this, it just gets really old after a while. So I feel the pain.
Yeah. Canceling those people tenfold, and don't deal with a lot of them. Some people know that it can take you a second to get into a meeting. Don't call them when it's on my calendar and I'm going to join it. Calm down.
Yep. All right. I'm going to cancel three things, actually. The first thing I'm going to cancel is the speed of the month of July. It seems like we just had the 4th. And then everything that happened after it, this entire month is a blink of an eye every single year. And it sucks because it's the best times of life. You have the 4th, you have family, friends, you have lakes, golf. I mean, yeah, you can do all this shit in August, but it's not the same with fall creeping in, especially if you're a kid who goes to school. You know that, having to go back to school is near, and having to go back to real life is near. So it does suck. How fast July goes.
Yeah.
And I know, like, personally me, I have fun stuff I do every weekend in July that I do almost every year. So this is like, this is a time of tradition, and it just fucking sucks how fast it goes by. Today's already, when we're recording this, it's already August 1st.
I know.
It's bullshit. And I won't stand for it anymore. We need to slow down the month of July. That's the solution.
It sucks. And we got to find ways. How are we going to slow it down?
Well, we'll have to have Father Time on the podcast.
Father Time on the podcast, or we bring this up many times, I think, for solutions, is somehow join the metaverse.
Oh, correct.
The metaverse does something. We could probably
It's always a good time. I mean, it's always the good times when you're in the metaverse.
Well, I mean, the metaverse is all virtually made. I'm sure Mark Zuckerberg can figure something out where he just makes the entire year July, or makes July feel like 100 days rather than 30.
You know the quote by Andy Bernard where he says, you never really know you're in the good old days until they're already gone, or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
Mark Zuckerberg could essentially solve that problem by always making it the good old days in the metaverse.
I could totally see like an intro, a really cheesy video. Andy Bernard in The Office said, you don't know you're in the good old days until they're behind you. I'm willing to bring the good old days to you.
To the present.
To the present. Dude, that's exactly what he would do. And he just looked like this fucking robot lizard ass. Dude.
Life as we know it is over.
Jeez, it's done. Control.
Actually, a funny bit I like to do is like when I fill up 110, when my tank costs $110, I like to take a picture of it and just say, instead of like saying thanks Biden or thanks like politician who influences gas prices, I say a billionaire, completely unrelated. Yeah. Like, thanks Mark Zuckerberg.
He might have something to do with it though in some way or capacity.
Or I'll take a picture of it and just be like, thanks Robert Kraft. Fucking asshole.
Thanks Rob Lowe. What? Oh.
It's the best.
Yeah, it's just, that's a good bit.
It's a good way to stay out of the political limelight. But another thing I have as well is I'm going to cancel golf courses who don't have scorecards on the second hole. So if you're a golf course who doesn't provide scorecards on the carts and you don't have them at the second hole, I fucking hate you. And yeah, it's my responsibility to grab one while I'm in the pro shop. You put it right in front of me where I can see it, but I'm too passive aggressive. I'm worried about just sliding my card in there and getting out of there. I'm socially anxious.
But it's courtesy. It's common courtesy and etiquette to probably have one on hole two. Because some people are gonna forget it.
I stare at the scorecard and I'm like, they'll probably have one in the cart.
Yeah. Right?
They'll probably have one on hole two.
They
don't, then you have to edge your scores into the steering wheel where it gives all the warning instructions.
Oh, the Bev Clark girl will have one.
Yeah, sure. Or you pull out like an old piece of paper out of your bag and you write it down.
You already start manually.
Or the old Notes app on the phone.
Oh, I tried the Notes app once, or not the Notes app. I actually tried like a scorecard like app, and it was actually kind of pissing me off because I can't see the entire card,
right?
All the holes that actually drove me.
You
nuts.
Can only see one hole at a time,
exactly, or two
like
or
the
three.
Golf
holes.
Genius app for tournament scoring. It's the worst.
I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah. The third person I'm canceling is myself. I just want to once again cancel myself for
everything.
The tea time.
Yeah.
Thing. Just, I couldn't get it out.
The cancellation tea time
bit. I
felt
so bad about that.
So it's going full circle. We went from that being your bit to now canceling
myself because it was a bit.
Yeah.
It's too disrespectful to make fun of. And I was a bad friend. So I'm canceling myself for that.
But we ended up golfing anyway.
Figured it out.
And do you want to mention what Bubba did?
Yeah, we could. Yeah, Bubba's
an asshole.
Yeah, he stole a putter.
Yeah, if you don't know Bubba, what is he? Is he at herniated Bubba on Twitter?
Yep.
He stole a putter. Like you find a club, like someone left it at the hole 18.
There's an unwritten code in golf.
It's not finders keepers. I think he said finders keepers. That's bullshit. You're supposed to take it back to the golf shop, the pro shop, and say, hey, someone lost this putter, and they'll grab it for the person that's obviously or hold it for the person that's obviously going to come looking for it. No, Bubba said, "Yeah, I'll bring it back." Nope, just gets in his car and drives off. He says, "I have a new putter."
So we're canceling Bubba as well.
Yeah, we're going to cancel that.
It's a dick move. It's not like finding a $20 bill where anyone could claim it. Like if it's a specific putter, when someone comes back for it, the pro shop will be like, "What kind of putter are you looking for?" No one's just going to be able to name that exact style, that exact model, and get lucky that they have one to steal. Like, it's going to be the exact person who lost it will come back looking for it, and now it's not there.
It's going to be a very sad day when they go there and they're like, "I'm looking for this putter," and they're like,
"Putter,
we don't have it.
Had that putter since the 80s.
Nope.
Had a lot of good times with that thing, and now it's gone.
It's gone with Bubba.
Sucks. But, all right. Canceled myself, canceled Bubba. It's just all things are right in the world. Folks, that was another episode of It's a Bit. Once again, if you want to sign up for the 10K Invitational or the Twins Cup Snake, you can go to 10ktakesmn.com. Click on the Invitational tab as well as the Events tab for the Twins tickets. And while you're there, check out the blog. Mm-hmm. We just brought on some new bloggers. There's going to be some good stuff coming down the pipeline. Today, we actually wrote a great blog. I know we're recording this Monday, so this is probably old news by the time this airs. But Kaprizov's back in the U.S. Let's give a quick round of applause for that.
And he has landed.
And Dev used the cover photo coming all over the ice, and people on Facebook are having a heyday about that. For whatever reason, they have never seen that.
Yeah, they're like, maybe you should check the graphic again. Oh, yeah, well, yeah, we didn't intend for that to be the joke. I'm sorry. Yeah. Cancel us.
Read the amount of F-bombs in that blog and see if it makes sense.
They don't even click into it to understand the bit.
No, they don't. They don't buy into the bit.
They don't buy into the inverbial bit.
Correct. But check out that. Check out our other pods. Also, make sure to listen to our radio show we have on KFAN on Sundays at 1. It's a Bet. Been a little dry lately, but we've been getting through it. Also, there might be some exciting upcoming news for what we'll be doing on KFAN during Vikings pregame. Can't say too much yet.
Yep, can't say too much, but it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, so a lot of exciting things coming, folks, in the coming weeks. And just stay tuned on our socials, 10K Takes on all of them, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube. We hope you guys have a great Wednesday, and we'll see you next week.